The final frontier begins.
This is about saving the future of humanity.
This is a huge victory for the good guys.
You've never seen Voyager.
Commitment to this course of action is not emotional.
Study! Beam us up.
Welcome to another episode of Beam Me Up, a Star Trek podcast. I am Brent Allen, your host, and I have seen every episode of Star Trek 47 times.
And I'm Matt Sonnenberg, and this is my first time through the series.
And this is the show where we are on a mission to introduce as many people as we can to the world of Star Trek, get them beamed up into the fandom. And boy, oh boy, what an episode do we have to do that one today.
But right now, we want to get you beamed up onto our website, beammeuppod.com. Head over there, check us out, let us know what you think, see if we can make any improvements on it. But everything should be functioning this week, so I'm happy about that.
Well, today's episode is the series finale, episodes 25, 26 of season 7 of Star Trek, The Next Generation. Matt, it has finally come to a close.
It has.
The episode is entitled All Good Things, or as I like to call it, Encounter at Farpoint Part 2. In case you don't remember or didn't watch this one first, in this episode, we are taken on a journey to explore the mystery of Picard past, Picard present, and Picard future, and how it relates to the annihilation of all mankind. And of course, Q is at the center of it all, because it's always Q. Now, Matt, yes, we're going to get into this episode and we're going to dive deep into it.
Okay.
But
I'll do my best to follow along.
You just watched this episode for the very first time in your life. You've never seen it before.
Correct. This one I have definitely never seen before.
I haven't asked you this in a while, so I will ask you, but I'm going to do this at the beginning this time. For somebody who is watching on their first run, does this one get you beamed up into the fandom? Are you a fan of this one, or are you going to kind of poo-poo on this one like you have some of the other marquee episodes we've had over our run here?
Honestly, like, it's not a bad episode.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, it's not my favorite. I wasn't like blown away by it.
Oh, you're killing me, Matthew.
Do what I can, I guess. I'm not even trying.
Not even right. You're just, it's just who you are. Matt, it's really one of those. So I asked some people out on Facebook today. I'm going to do something. I've never done this on this show before. I asked some people today where I said, you know, we're coming up on one of these big marquee shows that everybody just tends to love. But I wonder if people out there remember what their first experience was of this episode.
Yeah.
Like where was that? So a couple of people, this is over on Camp Kittimer, the Facebook group for Trek Geeks. And I just want to read a couple. I'm not going to read them all, but I just want to read a couple of the responses here. And I told them all, I said, I'm going to use this in the show, so be careful. So if you responded, then thank you for giving me permission to use this in the show. Rick said that it may sound like hyperbole, but it ended so well that it took away from the sting that TNG was ending at all, which I thought that was really. Debbie says that she remembers crying a lot because TNG was over, but she really liked how the series was brought first full circle back to Farpoint and bookended with that first encounter with Q. And we'll talk about that. I promise you. Mm-hmm. I promise you. But Tyler said, I was very underwhelmed by it. It felt too small for the grand finale of this series.
There you go, Tyler.
There were some good things with it, like the final card game, but ultimately I found it to be a big letdown. And then
he may be a little bit too far past where I am, but I think we're in the probably in the same boat.
You two are in the same boat. Yeah. And then Perry says, I clapped exuberantly, especially after sitting through the episode with cats turning into iguanas and grandma reliving ghost rapists. Matt, you didn't see those episodes. You did not see those episodes. There was an episode. Okay, I have to say, there is an episode. It's in season 7. It's called Sub Rosa. By many accounts, by many people, they would say it is the worst episode of TNG.
Okay.
It's a Beverly Crusher episode where she goes to like some Scottish colony, kind of like a Scottish Disneyland or something. I don't really know how to describe it. but her grandmother has just died. And turns out like there's this ghost hanging around that's like sucking the life out of her grandma. And now this ghost is like attached itself to Beverly, but it's this romantic relationship that they have. Huh. But it's really this parasitic ghost sucking energy off. It's weird. It's not good.
That is weird.
But, you know, given how you feel about a lot of episodes, because everybody else hates it, you might love it. So and every episode is somebody's favorite. So, you know, that one might be yours. But anyway, so thank you.
Is Wesley in it?
No, I don't think so.
Well, then it's probably not my favorite.
You know, that's why this episode's not your favorite. There was no Guinan and there was no Wesley.
That's
why it's not your favorite.
Very, very true. I didn't go back and think it all the way through, but going into this episode, one of my first thoughts was, man, I hope they don't leave anybody out of this episode. Like anyone major, like that'd be the weirdest thing. It's like, we're going to have this series finale and Geordi's not going to be in it.
Right.
Or something like that.
But they brought back Tasha Yar. They brought back Chief O'Brien. He wasn't before he was even Chief.
Didn't bring back Wesley.
Didn't bring Brett Guinan. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, they're even like in three time periods. So it's not like, oh, he's off doing something here. You went back in time.
And
a little bit too far back in time.
But. And as they showed us from season one, Riker, you didn't even actually need to bring them on set.
Yep.
And we'll talk about that when we get to that part of the episode.
I did have questions.
Well, Matt, I got to tell you, for me personally, I'm on the way opposite side of you. I think this is one of the best series finales I've ever seen out of any television show. I don't know that this one is not quite like Avengers Endgame series finale, which I know that's a movie series, but not a television series, but still stay with me on that. The way they handled Avengers Endgame was marvelous.
Thank you.
It was great. This one is not quite like that. I don't think that they quite as put as much thought into it, but it bears that with me, that it bears up to that for me, especially when I think about the series finales of so many other really, 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 really good shows. I think it's hard to do a good series finale that is worthy of the rest of the show. Like in general, I think that's probably pretty hard to do, but I thought these guys did this one. To me, this one holds up just as much today as it did back then. And it gives me all the feels. So Matt, let's get into it, because I want to dive through it and kind of really get your reactions to different parts of this episode. What do you think about it that is a little underwhelming to you? Like what was it? Was there anything you could put your finger on?
I think it feels very atypical of a series finale. Like I think a little bit of the difference is like a lot of the series finales that I've actually watched are like sitcoms, right?
Okay.
So yeah, like my generation is Friends and The Office and Parks and Rec and
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Yep. And like the closest I could think that that's like sci-fi fantasy that I've watched like the entire thing and seen the series finale and stuff be like Lost.
Right.
Which was, you know, not a sitcom.
Right.
And so this series finale, the bulk of it to me, unless I'm completely missing something, very much feels like another episode of TNG.
Okay.
Like it's just another episode of TNG.
Sure.
And like, it doesn't feel like, oh, do you, except for the poker game at the end, it didn't feel like, hey, we're ending. Mm.
Let me ask you this. Do you, it's interesting you say that, because I have two immediate thoughts, but let's do this one first. Is it possible that it felt that way because this was how they did series finales in the 90s, like where everything was so like where everything was so episodic? Because even with like Friends and my God, especially with Lost, and the other shows that you mentioned, those are all shows that characters grow and evolve and develop over time. Mm-hmm. And like who Chandler and Monica were at the end of the show were not who they were at the beginning of the show. And yes. Who Dwight and Jim and Pam were is not who they were from the beginning of the show.
Yes.
Whereas with TNG, like Picard was Picard kind of all the way through. Riker was Riker just with a beard and he filled out a lot more. Like these characters were kind of like it, you know what I mean? And there was a little bit of growth. There was a little bit of change that happened over the course of the series, but you didn't really have to watch the series to the final season, especially didn't build towards the series as it does so often with these other episodes. Like I remember with Big Bang Theory, that's one of the more recent ones in my memory. They built toward that for like a season, at least a full season.
Sure.
You know, like they knew they were going there. And so they built towards that. They didn't do that here. Like, but like when you say it just sort of felt like another episode, and I'm kind of like, yeah, it kind of was. Sort of.
Yep.
And I like the normal episodes.
That's why I'm kind of wondering if like maybe you, okay, you didn't see this live, correct?
That is correct.
But still you saw it. Do you know when the first time you saw this was?
It had been 2000, somewhere between 2003 and 2005. So early aughts. Okay. Yeah. So let's just say like, 10 years after it aired.
Yeah. I'm just trying to put that in perspective with like those other shows that we were talking about that are so different and they've changed how they've done series finales now. Mm-hmm. If you were still kind of in that era of old series finales, and so it just still plays a little bit to your nostalgia. Uh-huh. Whereas, yeah, I that's not what I'm used to, I think, because a lot of series from the 80s and early 90s, I think by the time I was watching TV, most of them were not quite as episodic. Like I'm starting to think even like Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
right,
which started and ended in the 90s yet, I think, mm-hmm. but it very much had a overarching storyline.
And TNG didn't. I mean, I've so often said Deep Space Nine, I think, is really responsible for heavily responsible for the way we do TV today, where it's way more serialized than it is episodic. And Next Generation was very much made. You can watch episode from season one and then go into episode from season four and have an episode from season seven. And except for the very obvious costume changes and just individual physical growth over the course of 7 years, you wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree. And I think you're right. I think that may be part of it. I wouldn't have thought of that, but yeah. I think that may be part of it.
So you're,
I think if this wasn't a series finale, it maybe could have been a season finale. Uh-huh. But if it wasn't a series finale, I think I would have had a higher opinion of it slightly.
Like, okay.
It's a good episode.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel like a series finale.
Gotcha. And I think what I'm hearing is there's even a little bit of you're looking at this episodic series finale through the lens of your personal modern, more serialized style of watching television, of what you know.
Yeah. Like I said, I can't think of another series finale I've seen from an episodic TV show.
Right.
Like I'll have to go ask my dad again. It's like, what was the series finale of Gilligan's Island like, or I Dream of Jeannie or something? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Something from the early old days that I am slightly aware of, but
yeah, in straight, because you sort of get this, they just kind of are doing episode after episode after episode. And then you come up to the finale and you're like, oh, okay, here's the finale. So, well, let's talk about this a little bit, because as you might imagine, Matt, there's a lot of production notes as far as leading up to this episode of things that we may not cover. So I want to get through some of these. We don't really have any character actor spotlights because
that would be weird.
We've done them all. Right. We've done them all. I mean, I will mention Cole Meany is back as O'Brien. Years. And
by the way, here's this character we've never talked about.
Yeah. We're not. And if they were, and you should know who they are, because they're not coming back. Like, you know, but Cole Meany's back as O'Brien. Denise Crosby is back as Tasha Yar. John Delancey's back as Q. Guinan's missing. Wesley's missing.
Okay. Blah, blah, blah. I want to say right off the bat, though, this is a huge reason I hate opening credits.
Oh,
They are so spoilery.
Yeah.
And back in the, you know, 60s, people probably didn't care, or they weren't paying attention.
They didn't know the names of their actors. Now I'm sitting here
watching it.
Yeah.
And I mean, up front, and it's like John Delancey as Q. I'm like, well, that tells me a lot about this episode. Like, as soon as there's a problem with something, and I mean, the dive into it, it's like, oh, time travel. Oh, hi, Q. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then right after that was Tasha Yar. I'm like, that's weird, but okay. I know to expect her now. Like, there's no surprise anymore.
Right.
And like, okay, fine. It's in the actor's contract. They want to get that credit, that accolade, whatever. But really, guys, like, I don't know. For me, it takes away a lot out of the episode.
There has been Has it been on this show that we've done, Matt? Maybe it's on another one. Like, I know there are instances where guest stars were like, don't put my name in the credits because we want to save the surprise.
I don't think we've ever talked about that. Have we not? Okay. There may have been, like, honestly, yeah. Usually nowadays I kind of fast forward through the opening sequence.
Sure.
But then, like, the special guest actors, special appearances
that rolls are always
over top of the show. Yeah. And I'm like,
yeah,
I can't miss that. I can't not see that.
Right. Right. I'm with you on that. All right. Well, a few things. So this is the first of the Star Trek series that knew it was writing its series finale. Because if you remember with the original series, they just ended.
Yeah.
Studio pulled the plug on them. They didn't know.
It's always rough.
Right. So with that, this episode is written by Ronald D. Moore and Brandon Braga. Those are two names you should be at least somewhat passingly familiar with at this point, Matt.
Ronald Braga, for sure.
Brandon's been around since season four. Like, and
I've heard the name. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to pull it out, though.
He came in around season four as an intern and just graduated into being a regular writer on the show. Brandon's going to go on to become a major writer on Voyager. And Ronald D. Moore is going to keep doing some stuff over on Deep Space Nine before he jumps over and does Battlestar Galactica. Now, you know that this isn't our last Next Generation story, right, Matt? You know that there's at least a handful of movies coming up.
I mean, prior to doing this podcast, I didn't.
Right.
But like, I knew the original series movies. Yeah. I know you have talked that there are Next Generation movies.
There are Next Generation movies. There are four of them. We will do three of them.
Wow.
Okay. But we are going to do them in keeping with air order. So, so you kind of get that. And there's a really special reason for that later. And you'll understand why when we get there.
Sure.
But when they went to film this, the way it basically worked was they went in, they filmed this episode, they wrapped production on the series, they gave the cast about a 10-day break, and then they brought them right back to start filming the very first movie. Like, it was right there. So
I'm impressed they had it like greenlit already.
Oh yeah, it was there was no doubt about that. That's the way they're gonna do it. Which I've seen shows, Stargate SG-1 is one of these, where they got to the series finale and basically, like, they knew they were ending, but they weren't done telling their stories yet. So they said, well, we're going to do a movie after the show's done to wrap up all the storylines. And so they knew when they were writing the series finale that wasn't the last story that they were going to be telling. Uh-huh. Now, to hear the actors talk about it, they're like, no, basically, we wrapped production on a Friday. We went home for the weekend and came back on a Monday. And so to them, it didn't feel like there was any time mm-hmm. lost whatsoever. In fact, production on the movie had already begun. Like, the elements that didn't involve the cast, they were already filming those elements of the movie. Well, that movie happened to be written by Ronald D. Moore and Brandon Braga. And Rick Berman approached them and said, hey, I know you guys just did this movie, but how do you feel about writing the series finale of Next Generation? And they were like, sure. And there were times where they talk about, like, how they were having to edit drafts of the movie while they're writing this episode. And they kept, like, getting things mixed up between the two. But, you know, they said that they wanted to write this one more as a letter to the, like, a love letter to the fans of Next Generation. Sure. And they both said in the commentary for the movie that they actually felt that the script for All Good Things was better than the movie that they had just written, which was interesting.
Are we going to watch that movie?
We are going to watch it when it comes out. No, we're not skipping that one. No, we will watch that one. We will watch that one.
That doesn't really excite me too much.
Yeah, it's the concept behind the movie is super cool. Actually, I really like this movie. There's a lot of fans who are like, yeah, it's all right. Usually, like, when people rank it, it falls like in the middle-ish somewhere. I like it quite a bit. And I have a feeling you'll probably dig it quite a bit, but we'll see. I don't know. You often surprise me on this show. Yep. Now, early versions of this episode involved an actual fourth timeline. Can you guess what timeline they would have pulled for the fourth timeline? Because they wanted, you know, they were pulling various points mm-hmm. of, you know, they had Picard future, Picard present, Picard season one. They're going to do a fourth timeline. Can you, any guesses as to what it might have been?
Not really offhand. I mean, I'm not that good with it. I I will say I was both surprised and relieved that they stopped at three.
Uh-huh.
Because it's already a lot of jumping around. And I'm like, okay. Once I figured it out, it's like, okay, past, present, future. I can keep track of that. Mm-hmm. Cool. But at the same time, I expected them to add in another one, at least, maybe two.
Yeah.
Like that's what it felt like where they were going with it. I'm like, there's just going to be so many timelines going on. And I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be rough, but here we go. I'm in for this.
Well, it would have been from the time when Picard was still Locutus of Borg.
Yeah.
And it would have been during the attack of the Battle of 359 of Wolf 359.
Yeah.
And in that particular timeline, we would have actually seen Hugh coming to Picard's rescue.
Interesting.
Yes. Now, and again, like they really wanted to highlight some of these moments from Picard's life, and you know, they wanted to bring Hugh back on some level too, because he was such a momentous part of the show. However, Michael Piller put the kibosh on that. He's like, no, you need to small it down. Your guy, Michael Piller. He's like,
small it down. I understand. Michael Piller knows what he's doing.
Yeah. You're a big Michael Piller fan.
he really knows what he's doing.
Now, I want to talk about Piller and his contribution really to the story overall. The origin of the story came from a pitch that Ronald D. Moore had made earlier in season 7 when Q was going to have gone insane and the universe was going to start unraveling. And Ronald D. Moore says that he had this image in his mind of Q sitting in the streets of New York City, huddled up next to a trash can going, "I used to be a super being. I used to be a super being." That was like the image he had in his head of what like would spark that particular episode. Well, Piller didn't want to do that story, but he did start to think about the idea of what it would be like to have Q come back for the finale to bookend the series, since obviously Q was the guy there at the very beginning, right? Now it was Piller who really, when he started reading the script, he felt that the second hour, he thought the first hour was great. He felt that the second hour was just sort of wandering around aimlessly. And so he was the one who said, "Hey, have the three different Picards start to work together, like work that in."
That wasn't part of the original script.
No, that was Piller. That was Michael Piller.
I'm telling you, man.
That was Michael Piller. Yeah.
He is the man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not just Piller filler. That's Piller awesomeness.
He makes Star Trek work.
There's a reason he's around. So John DeLancey, the guy who plays Q, when he first heard that Next Generation was ending in the 7th season, he says he got all sentimental and he actually approached Rick Berman and said, "Hey, I've never asked you for a job, but I was there for the beginning. I'd really like to be there for the end. Can you please work in Q to this episode?" And Berman looked at him and said, "Say no more. You're already in it, whether you like it or not." Now, John DeLancey would later go on and deny that story and say, no, he never did come to that. But apparently there's like a recording of him actually saying it for the first time. So
interesting.
Can't get out of that, John. Sorry, buddy. So you have that with John DeLancey as we work our way up to this finale episode. Just a little FYI, this is the only episode, or I'm sorry, with this episode, there are only two characters that appeared in every single episode. Didn't miss a single episode. Which two characters are they?
I would have to imagine, like, maybe none. I don't know.
You'll probably get one of them, no problem. I'm just curious.
Those are the two.
Yeah, who are the two?
So I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Captain Picard should be in every episode.
And Captain Picard is in every episode, yes.
Okay.
That is true.
The other one I have on my mind is Riker.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling that we've talked about him not being in some episode. Well, I don't know, because we had the discussion, like the first episode he directed, he was just like had just like one scene in. So I mean,
he had the scene where he came in and hit on Data's daughter, daughter.
So like,
Commander, may I ask what like, your intentions are?
If he was in that, like you would think he'd be in the rest of them, but like I could still also see it being like the Doctor. Actually,
well, it definitely wasn't the Doctor. She was gone for a whole season.
That's right. We had the other Doctor. Well, my other thought was Troy, because she pops up a lot when I'm like, why were you there?
Contract.
Yeah. So
you're paying her anyway.
If I had to give you a single answer, I think I'd probably go with Riker, you know, captain and number one. Got to be in every episode, right?
What if I told you it was Data?
I would believe you.
Yeah, that'd be wrong, because you're right. It was Picard and Riker. They're the only two that appeared in every episode. So good job reasoning that one out. Speaking of Riker, prior to the airing of All Good Things, Jonathan Frakes hosted a Next Generation marathon where the viewers picked their top five episodes. Now, I will tell you, of these top five episodes, I have them. We have seen them all.
Oh, I was going to say, we've seen them all.
We have seen them all. Only one of them was an extra viewing.
Okay.
Would you care to take a guess at what the five are? Because you probably can't remember the names. Yeah, you probably couldn't. Let me say them and then you tell me if you remember what they are.
Sure.
All right. In no particular order, the first one was Relics.
I remember the title. I couldn't tell you what it was about.
That's the one where Scotty came out of the transporter.
Yeah, barely remember that. Barely remember that
one. Barely. Right, the next one is The Inner Light. Remember when Picard becomes the old man and has the family and it's all in his mind?
Oh, learns that's to play not what I was going to go with that one. Okay. Yeah. I remember that one though.
The Inner Light. Yesterday's Enterprise. That's the one where the Enterprise C came out and Tasha was there. You had like the two, like it went into parallel time.
Weird time travel one with Tasha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Best of Both Worlds Part One. It's the one where Picard,
that big
cliffhanger
finale one.
Yeah. Yep. And then Best of Both Worlds Part Two.
Oh, well, fine.
I think it's cheating that they counted those as two separate episodes, but you know, whatever. And then just a little side note, this one isn't really pertains much to this episode and you couldn't tell it. Entertainment Tonight, if you're familiar with that group, they were actually on set filming a documentary chronicling the end of The Next Generation. Apparently that led to a lot of friction during the final episode, particularly between the cast and the production crew. But most specifically towards Patrick Stewart. Now, if you remember, Patrick Stewart just directed the previous episode to this one, Preemptive Strike, the one with Ro where she went off to the Maquis. And he figured prominently in that particular episode as well, as far as some of the acting I do. But then in this episode, he's also filming this episode, a double episode where he is in all but three scenes, Matt. Picard was in every single scene except for three, having to play three different versions of himself. And he was tired. Apparently he got kind of snippy with people.
That wasn't just a bit in the episode. It was,
being tired. Yeah. Just being tired. So, all right, well, Matt, that's kind of some of the background. I've got a few other things that happen here. We'll talk about them as we get through, but we do have a double episode and we're already at 30 minutes into the show. So why don't we kick into it in high gear? What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right. All Good Things. Prologue. Worf and Deanna are coming out of the holodeck after an apparent date, like a real date. A real date. There's even a mention of clearing this new relationship with Riker, which Deanna balks at. And just as they go to kiss goodnight, a distraught and pajamaed Picard comes rushing in asking for the date. It's Stardate 47988. 47.
I gotcha.
47. He says he's moving back and forwards through time. Dun, dun, dun.
So, yes, Worf and Deanna, a very unlikely pair.
Okay.
I thought.
Okay, Matt, if you could see my notes, I'm going back to Preemptive Strike. Okay. I'm going down to the bottom of Preemptive Strike where I say, hey, what's our next episode? Our next episode is All Good Things on TNG. In big, bold letters, do not mention Troy and Worf. Talk to me about Troy and Worf, Matt. Talk to me about Troy and Worf.
I mean, super unlikely pair. I'm like, wait, they're actually together? Like, what's going on? And then, okay, then you give me, because Picard comes in, it's like, wait, I'm moving back and forward through time. I'm like, oh, okay, this is just like one possible future. This isn't actually happening right now.
Except, Matt, it was.
That was the present time.
This has been a thing that's been developing like for like four or five episodes here at the very end of TNG. And I didn't want to tell you about it because pretty much everybody's looking at that particular relationship going, why? Why are you trying to put Worf and Deanna together?
They ran out of ideas. Why? They hadn't tried it yet.
and so I wanted you to have that same feeling of like, what? Where does this come from?
Well, you see, that's
we all had like, that feeling.
Like I didn't get it until they're about to kiss goodnight and like they're having that conversation and like Worf was kind of driving it. Well, what about Riker? We should probably talk to Riker. I'm like I was pretty sure that Worf was just on a completely different page, being oblivious to things. Uh-huh. Like she's like, you know, all you have to say is it was like stimulating. Like, yeah, he's being Worf. Okay. Like he's just not getting it. And like, then she starts insinuating more and more that like, this is a date. This is a date. You want to, it starts like planning their next date. And I'm like, Deanna, I don't think Worf understands that you're talking about a date. Like that's the reaction that I was getting. I'm like, huh? Okay. No, no. Okay. They are both in this. What do you know? So it's good to know that everybody thought it was weird.
Yeah. And included in that was Marina Sirtis herself.
It's like, you're paying me, but fine. It's still weird. I don't like it.
Yeah. And not only that, but also, apparently Michael Dorn, like nobody was really happy about this whole Worf Deanna thing.
So the question is whose idea was it?
Yeah.
And who approved it?
Yeah.
And then who kept writing about it? After you get people's initial reaction, it's like, you're going to write about it some more.
Yeah. Apparently the writers thought that they had been actually seeding the idea since like season five, but nobody was like, no. And Marina Sirtis was always like, no, Riker is Zimzadi and that's it. And to quote Marina Sirtis, she says this, I didn't like and you're not going to fully understand this, Matt, because you didn't see any of the other episodes.
Yeah.
She's like, I didn't like the fact that Worf totally became un-Klingon-like when he was with Troy. He kind of became a expletive word that also can mean cat. A very weak individual.
Yes.
That we're not going to say on this episode. But she was not, Marina Sirtis did not like this whole, you know, Worf thing. Don't like it. I don't like it. Act one. Picard remembers being in another place and time. He says he remembers being in the past, but being in the future. But the details are all kind of super fuzzy. And then suddenly he's an old man working in a vineyard when a familiar voice, Geordi, comes up recalling the days of old. It's 25 years in the future. Gone is Geordi's visor with new ocular implants. And he's now married to Leah, whose last name, by the way, is Brahms, Matt. You wouldn't know her because we skipped those couple of episodes.
Yep.
And he's got three kids. And he's not an engineer anymore. He's a novelist. But it seems that Geordi has come to visit because Picard has been diagnosed with Iremotic syndrome, whatever that is. Suddenly, Picard begins to hallucinate, and the next thing he knows, he's back in the past on a shuttle with Tasha Yar, headed to his first visit to the 1701D. And then, as suddenly as all the others, he's right back with Deanna in her quarters, or his quarters, sorry.
So, 2 minutes into this episode, my first note I make in this section, just saw a credit for Q. That solves everything.
Sad.
I didn't care what was happening in the episode. I'm like, oh, Q's in it. Yeah. I know where this is going. Like, yeah, it didn't leave me guessing at all. Like, seriously, right, it takes so much out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. That, I wonder if that actually affected your feelings on the episode. Like, if it really had stayed like as a mystery of what was going on and you didn't notice that, if that would have.
I don't think it would have changed a lot.
Okay.
Basically what it came down to, because it was still a good like sci-fi episode.
Sure.
And it's just when something sci-fi was happening, or in particular, like, I mean, they just right off the bat told us I'm traveling through time. Like, okay, Q's probably responsible for that. And turns out like that's all he was responsible for. Like he wasn't actually responsible for the anomaly and stuff that we'll get into. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like, oh, okay, that works. Anyway, part of the reason this episode took me so long to get through is because I took like way too many notes.
Okay.
Like I should have just sat down and watched this episode and let it go and just get like an overall picture, knowing that we're going to do this episode very shortly after I watch it.
Sure.
So I'll be okay. I can remember most things like that. That's usually why I take notes, is because like sometimes it's a couple days before we actually record the episode.
Sure.
And it's like, I need to remember what happened, but here there were so many jumps, and like every time we switched, I'm like, well, I got to make a note of that so I know which timeline I'm talking about. And then that's when I got worried. I'm like, how many timelines are there going to be? Right. And it's like, oh man. Then once I figured, like, I started in the beginning, I was labeling them like vineyard, or with Geordi or with Tasha and stuff like this, like things that seem to be mm-hmm. only a part of that timeline. And of course that would have sucked it by the end. They all start melding together practically. And eventually it's just like, oh, I can label them past, present and future. Got it. That helps out a lot.
Right.
But still, I mean, it was way too many notes. The big surprise for me in this opener though was mm-hmm. Geordi without the visor.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you notice the contact lenses that they had in them? Like they were still bionic, right?
I kept trying to get a look at his eyes. Like they did not give us many close up of his eyes.
No, they didn't.
There was one towards the end of the episode where I got a pretty good look at it. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. they did still put something in his eyes. It's not just his eyes.
Right.
So I was appreciative of that. But yeah, I've seen him without his visor before, but then I think it was typically just like white eyes.
They did like the white thing and then they had the little blinking thing on the side of his head.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've seen that before, but like I had to do a double take. I'm like, wait, can you actually see, or you're just not wearing the visor anymore because you're not on the ship? Like you just decided not to wear it anymore.
So can I talk about Geordi's wife for a second?
Sure.
I gave you both of these as extra viewing episodes, which I know you didn't go do because I know which ones you do and you don't do.
Yep.
But so Leah Brahms was a scientist who, I think she was a designer of the Enterprise. I want to say it was that.
Did we Pretty know sure. that they got married or they were dating or anything before this episode?
No.
So
no.
It was just this was a character we introduced a long time ago. And in the finale, we're going to say they're married.
When they came back and he said, how is Leah? Everybody went, oh, he married Leah Brahms. Because here's the thing about it. So Geordi, they're out in space and there's a problem with the Enterprise. And Geordi basically says, okay, I need to talk to the creator of the Enterprise. And he creates the holodeck character of Leah Brahms so he can interact with her and try to figure out something that's going on. Well, Geordi's infamously bad with women.
Yep.
He winds up falling. You see where this is going. He winds up falling for holodeck Leah Brahms. Okay. And that doesn't all work out because, of course, it's a holodeck character. Well, a season or two later, guess who actually comes on board the Enterprise? Is the real life Leah Brahms.
How'd she escape the holodeck?
They kind of have like a little thing until she finds the holodeck version of herself.
Oh, boy.
And then she confronts Geordi and it's just this big blow up and all this kind of stuff. And I'm not going to go too, but that's kind of how they sort of really left it. And Geordi's church is just notoriously horrible with women. In fact, it's one of the things we didn't track through this series. It is comical when you look at it at just how bad he is. But yeah. So when they said, when he said, how is Leah, and the idea, and he said, she's working at the Daystrom Institute. Like that's Leah Brahms. And everybody's like, ah, now the names of the kids mean absolutely nothing.
Okay. So I did kind of wonder if that, had any meaning to anybody, but Picard made ambassador.
Yes. Yes. Ambassador.
Whatever that rank is. Is that above admiral or is it just different?
It's different. That means he's a civilian now. He's not in the, he's on the same level as Lwaxana Troi, who also was not in this episode.
I'm okay with that. Could have been.
You know who I heard this as a rumor. I need somebody out there who's listening to go double check this for me because I've never noticed it, but I heard this. You know who also was not in this episode, at least according to this one source that I found, and I've not been able to prove it one way or the other, and I didn't go back and rewatch the episode just to see.
Who's that?
Majel Barrett as the computer. The computer did not talk in this episode.
Interesting.
And again, I did not have time to go back and rewatch this episode just to pay attention to that thing. But if somebody out there knows, if they can confirm or deny that one way or the other for me, please email me, beammeuppod@gmail.com. I would love to know, or shoot me a thing on Twitter @beammeuppod. I would love to know because that's what I was told was.
That might be right.
Yeah.
I can think of at least the one time I remember someone talking to a computer was Data at his house when he puts the fireplace back up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he just says, computer, like a Zoom hologram or whatever, and it just does it.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a response.
Exactly. Yeah. First Lady of Star Trek didn't make the finale. Yeah. Anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah. Talk to me about, I don't know if you had anything on the Aeromotic syndrome, but when you saw the hallucination, these yes. shabbily dressed characters, talk to me about that mm-hmm. moment. Did you recognize them? Was there any clue or tip off okay. on that? Or
okay. So the first time I'm kind of proud of myself for this. The first time that they appeared, I'm like, they seem familiar.
Okay.
They don't seem like they're just, you know, out of nowhere. Uh-huh. And I couldn't quite place them. The second time they appeared, though, mm-hmm. I don't know what it was. If it was just like, okay, there has to be something to them, so I need to figure this out, or if it just clicked then or what. But the second time, I'm like, I think those were the things from the trial, that big group of people that we talked about that once. Because like, I felt it was weird that like I felt they're almost like jeering him. Like jeering is the word that I wanted to use.
Sure.
Picard used the word laughing, like they're laughing at me. Okay. And I guess I can see that it's kind of similar. But like I went back and placed them at that trial, and I was happy to see that that's where they were coming from.
Congratulations, Matt. I did not. I distinctly remember not being able to place that particular group of people. So hey,
for me, it was only like, what, 24 episodes ago.
It's true. It's true. Very true. Yeah,
it was maybe more than that. I don't know how many.
I think we've done
how many TNG episodes have we watched?
I'd say it's in the 30s. It's not higher than 39. It's in the 30s. So yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. And then he flashes back and there's all of a sudden Tasha Yar, and we're getting the tour of the ship.
Who, by the way, I probably would not have been able to place mm-hmm. if her name was not in the credits.
Really? Okay. Not surprising. I think you saw all of 4 episodes with Tasha total.
Yeah. I didn't see her a lot and I didn't really get attached to her or anything. So,
you know what? I didn't either. And I'll be real honest. I don't like, I get it. She was one of the main characters. She was one of the original cast. She had that great role to me in Yesterday's Enterprise. The whole thing with Salo was just dumb. And way underutilized. The like, constant connection to Tasha Yar and how people keep bringing her back up. Like, mm-hmm. she just wasn't that compelling of a character to me. Like, I think the show got better because she left, to be quite frank.
Sure.
You know, and she said, I think I said that she had to leave to get one of the best episodes of Star Trek, which became uh-huh. Yesterday's Enterprise. And she's right about that.
And I honestly, I loved that when they threw the little line in there later, when Picard tries to give a security order to Worf. Mm-hmm.
Right.
When Tasha's sitting across the table, I'm like it didn't even hit me that he messed up. Like, I'm right. used to Worf being the security guy. Yeah, exactly. That makes sense.
Right.
So like it didn't even click that. Oh yeah, that used to be your job, didn't it?
Act two, Dr. Crusher. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, we'll get there in just a moment. Act two, Dr. Crusher says Picard is perfectly fine. He doesn't even have Aeromotic syndrome, but a scan reveals that he is possibly, maybe in the future, susceptible to it. Well, whatever is going on with Picard, it's just going to have to wait. There's a plot line to get to. The Romulans are up to something in the neutral zone in the Devron system, and Starfleet is sending the Enterprise, plus a bunch of other ships, to go patrol the border and just be a presence. But as Picard stands up, he's back in the vineyard as an old man. He seems to know that he's bouncing through time, but of course he sounds like his old age and senility are finally catching up with him. He insists that it's not daydreaming, but old man Picard is adamant about going to see Data. He has to go see Data. And what he sees right now are those hallucinations again. Sometime later, Geordi and Picard are at Cambridge University visiting Professor Data. As Data tries to suss out what's happening, we get a definitively Sherlock Holmes vibe to this whole thing. And as Picard stands up from his chair, he's suddenly back to season one, as he's in the process of taking command of the Enterprise for the very first time, signed by Admiral Nora Satie. But Picard is seeing the hallucinations yet again. Picard sounds a red alert in his first act as captain, confusing the hell out of everybody.
Yeah, the time jumps throw everybody for a loop. I will say, though, I love how it was written and directed. Like the times they chose to do it, the things he was saying, and that they like allowed the other timelines to react to it. Mm-hmm. Like he was transported mid-sentence and they're like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. What'd you say? Okay, sure.
The way the transitions worked and stuff, the way they cut it together. Yeah, it's beautiful. It was beautiful. Great, greatly done episode. Yeah.
Yep.
Before they did digital editing too. It's all with cutting and snipping. Yeah.
A fleet-wide yellow alert. I want to know how often that happens.
Not often, but often enough that they have a protocol for it. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't even know this was possible. But I suppose, yeah, when 30 Romulan warbirds are reassigned to the neutral zone, that's what you do.
Sure.
So it's an interesting setup. I don't know how much like the neutral zone ever really got drilled into my brain. It did a little bit, I know, at one point. But now having the idea of the DMZ mm-hmm. and how all that's set up, like, I feel like I have a much better picture of the neutral zone.
Sure. As you should.
It's a similar idea, right? They have a different name for it. Neutral zone or demilitarized zone. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Nobody go in there. You're on one side. We're on the other. Cool. So I had kind of forgotten about the neutral zone, but once again, as they do in their episodic ways, mm-hmm. they give you enough explanation to remind you, even if you haven't seen other episodes, it's like, oh, this is the Romulans. They're on the other side. We're going to go here. Don't enter the zone. You can just don't do anything. Cool.
Right.
Stay out. I mean, it's well named too, neutral zone. Like, it's not like they gave it some fancy name and it's like, we expect you to remember what this means. Data though.
Yeah.
So it's probably good that you finally gave me an episode where Data had a cat. Otherwise, I would have had lots of questions here.
Sure.
Like, at first I saw him just like pick up one cat, but then like Picard was walking around and like, oh, there's a cat up on the fireplace and there's a cat in the chair and there's a cat. And wow, Data, you really like cats.
Yeah, he does.
I also greatly appreciated the gray streak in his hair.
Gone a little rogue. Yeah.
Okay.
He doesn't have to, right? No, he just does.
No, he doesn't have to at all, but he's a professor now, you know?
Well, sure.
Got to look older, more distinguished. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No one's going to respect a 20-year-old professor.
It always occurs to me, like, I want to think about him particularly, and even Geordi. Like, Geordi's not necessarily at the end of his career, right? Like, he's not, Geordi's not of retirement age. Like, Picard obviously is. Picard retires from...
Picard's way past retirement. In which timeline are we talking?
In old man Picard. Like, he maybe went and became an admiral at some point in his career. He had several years as that, and now he retired from that, and now he's an ambassador for the Federation. Uh-huh. I can trace that.
Yep.
Geordi's nowhere near that. What caused Geordi to leave Starfleet? And what is he not better served to see? Like, he's a novelist. He has kids. He has a family.
I think he's a stay-at-home dad.
Fair enough. Okay, sure.
Because he told us Leah just became the director of the Institute.
Yeah.
So like she's the breadwinner. She has the job. She's going to do her thing. He stays at home.
They don't have money in the future, Matt. Fine. Picard told us that.
Yes.
I mean, out on Deep Space Nine, not in the Federation.
He can still be the stay-at-home dad. Although now things are changing because his oldest son is going off Starfleet.
Right.
So,
right. Okay. And then Data. And then Data. At what point does Data go, you know what? I've achieved everything I want in Starfleet. I don't care who could use my help or where I'm best suited. I want to go be a professor and I'm going to attain the highest professorship there is like in the world and take up the residence of Sir Isaac Newton. Like, where does that become an ambition for an android?
Like, yeah, Data should be off on like his own ship that he built, exploring galaxies that no one has ever seen before. Like he doesn't
creating need his own Creed. Race of artificial people.
He should be off on that, you know, that higher level that Q's talking about, right? That's where Data should be.
He's hanging out with Wesley in the ascended plane is where Data is. It's the first artificial intelligence to go Q.
Yeah. Q, stop messing around with Picard. Go find Wesley.
Right.
He's your man.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Data.
And he goes, did they ever get together?
Who?
Wesley and Q.
There's a couple episodes, but I don't know. Like, I don't know what interactions
interacts with Picard.
Like, yeah, he had one thing where he did something with Riker, but that was mostly to show up Picard. It was always Q and Riker. It was always Q and Picard.
Yeah,
it really was. So, yeah.
Like, knowing where Wesley went now, or at least, you know, where he was headed.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll see him again, but like that
there are four is, movies.
Yeah, that is, it feels like it would be a better relationship for him. Mm-hmm. It's like Wesley is still human, or at least born of the human race. But
listen, we had Moody Wesley. How does that not set up perfectly to be, you know, jokester Q, mm-hmm. you know, in the future? I get it. Did you like the Sherlock Holmes-ish nature of like, I know it's not Sherlock Holmes. He's the Cambridge professor, but he very much goes into Sherlock Holmes mode.
Well, yeah, because he had to deduce.
Sure.
And anything you need to deduce, it's definitely Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was the architecture of the time period, the just Data's nature of problem solving. And Data very much loved Sherlock Holmes. So.
Which you wouldn't know that, except for the extra viewing episode that we did, which is over on patreon.com. All right. One more question, Matt, and then we're going to move on unless you have something else. Mm-hmm. Did you note who signed the order giving Picard command of the Enterprise?
Yeah. As you mentioned that Nora Satie, like I recognize the name. I think I remember not liking her.
That is true.
But I don't remember why. So I don't remember what she did.
There was an episode that we did called The Drumhead where she came on board searching out a traitor.
Yeah.
And she wound up putting this little kid on trial. And when that didn't work out and Picard was like, no, you're not going to do this based on circumstantial evidence. And it wound up turning on Picard. Yeah. She's like, I'll destroy you, Picard. I made you and I will destroy you. And then like everybody gets up and leaves and just leaves her sitting there in the room by herself at the end. Yeah, that was her.
Okay.
So again, they're giving these little nods, the Leah Brahms, the Nora Satie, the bringing back some of these older characters.
And that I greatly appreciate.
Yeah. And we get to see Picard taking command of the Enterprise, which we never actually got to see in the first one. So what did you think? What did you think of they went back to the season one uniforms? Did you notice?
I didn't necessarily notice on everyone else.
Uh-huh.
I noticed there was a change because Troy
was
wearing like the dress again. And I'm like, oh man, they made her wear that again. I'm sure she was thrilled about that.
Right. Did you notice the dude in the background who also had the dress on?
No.
Yeah. So in the very first show, they had a guy walking across who had the miniskirt on. Okay. And the whole point of that from Gene Roddenberry back in 1987 was when we get to the future, everything's unisex. The whole idea of gender norms and stuff is not a thing that we have to worry about in the future. The problem is it looked weird, especially in minds of 1987, and people really cut back at it. So they never brought that back for a guy. Sure. And they didn't do it much with Deanna past season one at all. I don't even know that she made it all the way through season one like that. So bringing that back
pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah. So bringing that back became a big thing. And the other thing too, and we can talk about it now, I guess, since we're in this mode, did you notice the changes they made to the set of the bridge
when they jumped back to the lean back chairs were there? The
chairs back. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did notice a few of those.
They brought some of the wood paneling back in to the bridge that had gone.
I was kind of wondering, like, did they have that as a separate set still like built, or did they have to rebuild it basically?
Well, they had to retrofit the set that they had. The other thing that they did, actually, I thought this was really cool. And if I'm misquoting the story and somebody else is like, no, that's not right, then forgive me. But the way that I understand it, Michael Okuda, who's the art director for Star Trek, he was talking about how finally for this episode, they went into the displays on the bridge of the Enterprise and they replaced the displays with actual monitors so they could have moving graphics in the scene. Up till this point, what they've ever had was it was a static thing. Yeah. And then they would switch to a close up, which they shot like as a B-roll type of deal of a monitor with moving graphics. They've never had it as part of the wide shot. Well, they finally went in and replaced those and actually put monitors just for this episode. Although I say just for this episode, there's a movie coming up with a really big budget, bigger budget anyway. So they did replace some of those. One of the things they left, like Worf had his old golden baldric back, but he had his new head. He didn't go back to his old bulbous head ridges. There's a few things they left, there's a few things they didn't, but
it was little things like that helped me place which timeline we were in then too.
Yeah,
like if I saw Worf with the gold, I knew which timeline we were in. Usually I would look and see, okay, is Tasha here or not?
Right.
That would be my cue. To see which timeline we were in.
Sure.
But I did appreciate all those little extra touches that they actually went back to. And I kind of wondered, I'm like, and that had to be a pain. And I'm like, I understand most movies, at least I'm assuming a TV show where at least like this, where they would have had so many changes, they don't shoot in order.
No, no.
Like I would have to imagine, okay, today we're doing all the past sequences. Mm-hmm. So you can stay in your uniforms. You can stay. We're going to keep the set all the same. Like we're going to shoot all those. Then we're going to rip everything, change the bridge again and move on to the present and then move on to the future. And because, yeah, that would be such a pain otherwise. Like can't keep changing that. There's no way they have time for that.
Act three. Captain Picard has decided not to tell this past crew what he's been experiencing. He asks a miniskirt clad Deanna if she senses any powerful alien beings with super intelligence. Not yet. They'll keep looking, though. Just then, not yet Chief O'Brien calls Picard to the bridge. It seems the Romulans are up to something in the neutral zone. In the Devron system. That sounds familiar. No time to think about that just now. Defying new orders, the Enterprise is going to continue on its way to Farpoint Station, just like they did in the pilot episode, because Picard is up to something. Some well-placed nods to future knowledge of how O'Brien is going to turn out and how he's going to become the chief and know all sorts of stuff. And there's a real nostalgic moment from Data where he doesn't understand idioms. And then Picard is finally back in the present, but now with a lot more memories. A lot more memories.
So I know you kind of complained, well, maybe not you specifically, but there may have been some complaints about like how much Picard was in this episode and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any other character could have pulled this off.
No, he's the series lead. That's him. Yeah. It's got to be him. Yeah.
Because especially when we get to this point where he's like, he has to very carefully tiptoe around like, okay, what information do I share with who? How do I lead these people to become the people that they're going to be without giving them too much information? Mm-hmm. Without like, because he made a whole point of, yeah, I can't tell the people in the past what happens in the future. I don't want to change anything. So it's like, how does he tell him, like, I know you can do this. How do you know? Well, I've seen you do it before. I can't, like, that doesn't make sense. He can't tell them that.
Right.
So he has to give this very eloquent speech about how he believes in him and how he.
Well, that doesn't come till later. Save that. That doesn't come till later. And but there's, I want to talk about that when we get there for sure.
Okay. Like, yeah, it's just very Picard, this whole episode. And like, no one else could do this.
Yeah.
But I will say, I was surprised that with the old crew, he just like, nope, ignore that order. We're going to Farpoint. Like, at that point, it didn't quite click what he had in mind.
That's good. Even though you knew Q was in the episode.
Well, I didn't remember Q was part of Farpoint. Come on, man.
Sure.
You know my
memory. You will now, though. You will, when, I promise you, when you go back and rewatch Farpoint Station and you have this in your head, and then you watch this having those couple of experiences, like this holds up on rewatch a lot.
I'm pretty sure we've talked about Farpoint enough that I would remember, if you say Farpoint, I would say first episode.
Sure.
If you said Farpoint, I would not say Q. If you said when was the first time we met Q, say, I don't know, like 3 or 6 episodes in. Like it was early, but I didn't think it was first episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wasn't connecting Q with Farpoint.
Fair enough. Well, Act 4. Quizzing Deanna, the team ascertains that whatever is happening with these time shifts, the events in one time period seem to be having no real effect on the other two. The only common thread is this mention of this anomaly over in the Devron system. Well, there's no telling what all that means right now. They've got a job to do in the present. With an awkward moment between Riker, Deanna, and Worf, everyone heads back to work. And Will is definitely, definitely distracted. Speaking of awkward moments, there's one between Jean-Luc and Beverly, until it's not so awkward anymore and it ends in a nice little romantic kiss. And the promise that a lot can happen in 25 years. And with that, old man Picard is waking up on the couch in Data's Cambridge study, insisting that they have to head to the Devron system in the Romulan neutral zone, or at least in what used to be the neutral zone. It's now controlled by the Klingons, and that's difficult in this time period. They place a call to Admiral Riker at Starbase 247. But after all they've been through together, Admiral Riker says, nope, no way, Jose. No matter. Data says that they can use a medical ship. It's a good thing that Picard just happens to have some quote unquote pull with the captain of the USS Pasteur. It's Captain Dr. Beverly Crusher Picard. That's right. Picard. Another awkward moment between Jean-Luc and Beverly, and they're on their way. They're going to need Worf's help to get clearance to enter into Klingon space. And after Beverly orders Picard to get some rest, Picard excuses himself to get some rest. Exiting the turbo lift, and it's past Picard again. Picard is looking for something at a specific set of coordinates. He's looking for Q, where they met him all the way back in episode one. But Q isn't there, where he should be. While everyone puzzles over what a Q is, Picard heads for the ready room, and he winds up back in the courtroom from episode one with all those shabbily dressed hallucinations future Picard has been seeing, and Judge Q. There's a lot that happened in that act.
Yeah, some of these acts were forevermore long.
And some of them were short.
Yeah.
That's how they balanced it, I guess.
So at the beginning of this, when they go into how nothing seems to be affecting the other timelines, mm-hmm. I was super surprised by that. Like, that is not normal for time travel of any type. Like, any time travel I see, it at least seems to affect it a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. I couldn't, at least offhand, think of another instance of time travel where going back and changing something in the past doesn't affect the future or something like that. And so this really threw me for a loop. Then you got to Picard and Crusher.
Yeah.
Is this their first kiss? I think it might be the first one that I've seen that I can remember.
This might be the first, like, truly romantic kiss.
Okay.
But if you'll remember in the episode we did Attached, which, by the way, I knew exactly what was coming, and I don't think you would have been able to appreciate any of this without the movie, without the episode Attached, but there was other things in Attached besides Picard and Beverly. They had a pretty good kiss at the end of that episode, but that was during the "Let's just be friends" speech.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. It felt from, like, camera angles and stuff and how long they took to do it. Like, mm-hmm. it felt like they were making a big deal out of it. And so that's why I questioned it.
Sure. See, that's the thing. Ever since that episode Attached, they were like, "Let's just be friends" at the end. I was like, no, you are not going to just be friends. It's impossible from this point forward. Sorry. And by the way, I think when they talk again, I go back to, they talk about that love letter to the fans, mm-hmm. like as a fan of the series, these are the little things. Like, I want to see Jean-Luc and Beverly together. After everything that I've seen over the last seven seasons, I want them actually together.
Sure.
And, you know, fast forward a minute, the fact that they made them divorced, which Ronald D. Moore says
they got together, but
it didn't work out. And Ronald D. Moore says he loved the fact that they actually got married, but then got divorced because it didn't work out. He loved it. And I, like, that's just sadistic to me. It really is. Like, I get it. I, you know, they did what they did with it. It's fine. At least they got together at some point in the future. And I'm okay with that.
Hey man, isn't that, I think I've tried to compare this before. I don't remember if it was the same relationship or not, but that's Ross and Rachel, right?
Right.
Like, everybody, yeah. get together. Oh, they're together. Oh, they're not.
Mm-hmm. They were on a break. No.
Anyway, best laid plans don't always work.
I'm sorry, Matt. I don't know that we can get out of here without our Harry Potter reference. It's Ron and Hermione. I think it probably affects more closely to Ron and Hermione than it is Ross and Rachel. Because Ron and Hermione is the, okay, no, they're totally a thing. Like, they totally like each other. They're just not admitting. They can't say it. They're not, like from book four on, Ron and Hermione. Like,
but they get together.
Yeah. And sure, they wound up staying together later. But, you know, even JK was like, yeah, they probably shouldn't have gotten together or gotten divorced. They probably would have gotten divorced in real life.
Maybe.
But I mean, it's.
Yeah, that hasn't been written anywhere.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think this, like, the Picard Beverly relationship is more like book six Ron and Hermione to me.
Okay.
To me. It's like they're together, maybe not officially, like we all know they are, but they're just not saying it. But we know that they are.
Okay.
That's just me. Way better than Worf and Deanna.
I think anything is gonna be better than that.
Oh
boy. Okay. Anyway, Admiral Riker.
Yeah. Worst makeup job of the whole deal.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
I was, like, super impressed how they age some people.
Yeah. Beverly looked great.
Beverly.
Yes. She looked amazing.
And I thought I didn't make a note of it, but in my head, I'm like, that is the best aging I have seen.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, that part of me kind of wondered, it was like, or did they just not put as much makeup on her? And that's how old she really is.
The only thing I can tell, because I watched the makeup special effects, like what they put Riker through, what they put Frakes through to age him up. Like, I think they did a good job for what their capabilities were back in 1994. Uh-huh. Okay. But you know how whenever you kind of age somebody in makeup, it always looks like a person who is aged in makeup, yep. And not actually old. I mean, that was Riker through and through. But Deanna, on the other hand, all they did was they gave her a neck appliance, something to like kind of make her neck look old.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. And then, like they did some like eye treatment to make her, like they put like glue like on her eyes to like highlight the crow's feet.
Okay.
Yeah, which they also did that to Picard. And then Picard had the beard, so that covered up everything else. Right. You know, with Geordi, they just put some gray flecks in there. We already talked about Data. He doesn't age at all. You know, Worf kind of got to look old, but he was just surly Worf as he always is.
Well, I mean, they gave Data gray hair too, but.
Yeah, but his face was. Yeah.
Well, he's not going to age. So, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I tell you what, Data doesn't age, but Brent Spiner sure does.
Riker, though, like, he got so much worse every time they gave him like a close up. Yeah. And like, when he got like a close up, like, of his beard area.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know exactly what it was, but it made me think of like, have you ever played D&D?
No, we've had this conversation.
Okay. I was pretty sure, but I just need to double check. Things haven't changed. Mm-hmm. So like, for anybody out there who has played D&D, the close up on Riker's face is my idea of what a bugbear looks like. I know that doesn't mean anything to you, Brent, but that's what I pictured. Just this gruff, bristly haired, like that's what, I mean, that's what I have in my head. I'm like, he looks like a creature that should live in the forest, not the admiral of Starfleet.
I'll give you one note that I had. I was watching, like I said, I watched the special features on the Blu-ray for this, mm-hmm. which I'd highly recommend that to anybody. It was really great. Looking at the footage, the low res footage, like from the home video camera that they had, like in the makeup trailer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He actually looked a ton better. And I really wonder if one of the things that we're seeing is this was makeup that was meant for standard def.
I bet that's part of it.
Because it's all been upgraded to high def.
I remember hearing that when like all the news stations went to high def, and it's like, the makeup we use doesn't work anymore. Everybody had to get different makeup because the high def just shows so differently.
I
would believe you when you say that.
That's the biggest thought that I have when it comes to that. Because I remember seeing that such low res footage. I was like, oh, that looks like an old man, you know? Sure. So I really wonder if I remember one of the things they talked about, how, when they went from standard def to high def, they actually had like where they put the panels into the consoles and stuff around the bridge. You could see the screw holes. Okay. But in standard def, you couldn't, those were just sort of washed out. But when they upgraded everything to high def, they had to go in and digitally fill in over top of the screw holes because you could suddenly see them now that they were in high def. So the idea that probably in 1994, that looked amazing. And on our TVs today, maybe not. That's not too far out of order for me.
Yeah.
But it still looks weird. Like, it still was not great. Not by our standards today.
I've had the same wondering about the movie Dinosaur. I know I've discussed this with you briefly.
Yeah.
Because our buddies over on the Castle Vault podcast are going through the old Disney Vault.
Yeah. And shout out, by the way, if anyone's a Disney fan at all, Castle Vault is your podcast. You need to go check it out if you like Disney movies, like the animated stuff.
But
and they were Josh talking and Jason. And you guys will never hear this because you don't listen to our show.
But that movie Dinosaur, like, it was made like early 2000s, but it's like all digital. Like they're trying to transition over to CGI. And we all watch it now and we're like, wow, that's rough. But then when Jason told me he was able to watch it on VHS, and I'm like, oh, I didn't realize they're still doing that. And I bet you on VHS, on a CRT screen, like it probably looked pretty good.
Yeah.
But now, once again, in high def, it's like, did not hold up.
Right.
I think that's the same thing we're probably seeing here.
Yeah.
So that, now that you bring that up, that's probably a very good point, and I will cut them some slack.
I was gonna say, can we give them a pass on that?
Yes.
I wonder what Deanna would have looked like if they had to age her up. of course, she was dead in the future, but, you know, I wonder how she would have.
That was a surprise too.
Because, you know, like with Tasha, they had to do the opposite effect with her. They had to try to make her look younger because she's now 7 years older.
Yep.
As a human being. Right.
And they had to bring her back as younger. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And she's and you know, I'm not trying to say anything negative, but like Frakes and like so many of the other characters, she's a lot more filled out.
Yeah.
You know, 7 years later than she was. Yeah, you know, and so
nowadays with all the digital stuff they can do, they have that fixed in Jiffy.
Yeah, they don't even need her to come back. They'll just, you know, put a dummy in there and Weekend at Bernie's it. So,
but no, I brought up Riker for another reason, because I thought this interaction with him, and I think it was probably just seeing how it turned out. I think it was just well written, well acted.
Sure.
But his dismissal of Picard just seems so abrupt. I'm like, are you hiding something? Are you like, what's going on over there that you just like, you want to get rid of Picard? And it just felt off.
I've always had a problem, and I've never had a problem until now, but I've always had a problem when Riker just goes Riker out or Starfleet out or whatever. And he just cuts the call. Yep. I'm like, dude, that's your guy. Like, that's your friend. That's your man. That's what I'm saying.
Like, but like that felt to me, it's like, I'm surprised Picard didn't react and say, oh, if he ever says Riker out abruptly, that's my cue. Like, he's in trouble. We need to go find him and help him. Like, I mean, that's what it felt like, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's his code word. Like, hey, I mean, yeah, it felt very much like something was off.
Matt, I will say this to you. If I ever go Mulberry out, that's a code. Please come help me. All right.
Like, you're being held at gunpoint.
That is a phrase I will never use. Never I promise use. You that.
Yep. All right. So I was questioning that. I'm glad it came back later that Worf, you know, brought it up again. It's like, that's weird. But anyway, I love that Data's, I touched on this earlier, that Data's fireplace is a hologram. That's just disguising his computer console. Like, of course, Data, you still need your electronics, but you're going to make your house look very sophisticated. Makes you wonder how much of the other stuff in there was holograms too. What does that room really look like? Is that just a holodeck? Are you living in the holodeck?
I don't think that that's any different than people who like have a TV that like turns into a picture on the wall or like their fireplace.
I know they advertise them like that.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who does that.
Haven't you ever seen Back to the Future 2, Matt? Come on, man. No, you're right. I don't. I've never seen that. I don't know in what case they would feel the need to go in and replace a real existing fireplace with a holo console. Like, I could see them like, hey, we need to put when they need to add in modern plumbing or add in like electricity to an existing historic house, they have to like kind of be careful how they go in and run stuff around. So they want to maintain this historic feel of this room. So they're going to make it look like a hologram when it's not being used as what they actually need for modern stuff. But I don't know that I would make it the fireplace though.
My thought is, Data doesn't need the heat from the fireplace, so who cares? But I would expect it more along the lines of, they upgraded this house over the years, but when Data became professor, he's like, no, I don't want that showing. I'm sophisticated. I'm going to make it look like the original. And so he programmed the hologram to do his thing. That's how I would think go about it, I think. But then, like you said, we found out Picard and Crusher were married at one point. We get the quick rundown of Worf. Well, at one point was on the Klingon High Council. Don't know if he still is. He's a governor somewhere. Like, they've all moved on, right?
Yep.
Dr. Crusher has her own ship. Like, all of these things. Like,
it's a medical ship, but she's the captain of the ship. Yeah. And one of the things, I think you briefly saw it, Matt, but you didn't see it in as much detail as they had in, if you'd watched all of the episodes of, you know, Beverly was a commander on the ship. Like, she took control of the ship. Like, she ran night shift a lot of the time just to keep her captaining ability there. Okay. So, yeah. I got to tell you, probably my favorite interaction of the whole, well, not my favorite, my favorite comedic part of the entire show is where Beverly's like, Jean-Luc, you need to go get some rest. And he goes, I will not be pandered to. Now I'm going to go get some rest. I love that moment. It's so great.
Yeah. But that's old man Picard too.
Oh, but it was like, so funny. Yeah.
He has so many old man moments in here. Sure.
Yeah.
Anything from, you know, get off my lawn to I think he says, I'm not an invalid at least two or three times.
Right.
Like such old man moments. Mm-hmm. Like, leave me alone. Don't treat me like I'm old.
Mm-hmm. What's the quickest way to know somebody who's crazy? They insist that they're not crazy.
Fair enough. Then we finally get the moment where Picard calls for Q.
Right.
And it finally all clicks. It's like, oh, okay. Got it. Farpoint Q. That's right. Sure. So Picard was onto this long before I was. And now Q appears. Yes. And all of the laughing people, which I had figured out.
And it's Judge Q.
Judge Q.
You immediately recognized it though, right? Like, you're like, oh we're back in the courtroom now. Yeah. I remember this. You recognize that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Like I specifically wrote down, because he doesn't say until after the break, he says, I'm Judge Q to you.
Yeah.
So before that, I actually wrote down, Picard is back on trial with Q.
Okay. And later you found out he's not back on trial. The trial never ended. Well, yeah. With that, Act 5, 7 years ago, Q accused Picard of being a dangerous part of a dangerous child savage race. Q put all of mankind on trial back then, but it turns out the trial has never ended and they're found guilty of being inferior. He says that they've squandered the last 7 years of potential for growth and the sentence is to be denied existence. Q confirms that it is he himself who is shifting Picard through time, and it has definitely something to do with this anomaly in the Devron system, but Q says he didn't do it, nor is he the one who is going to cause the annihilation of mankind, but rather it is Picard himself who does it. Court adjourned.
I'm honestly surprised you didn't bring up the best line.
Which was?
Biggest groaner, the biggest dad joke of them all.
Because I was saving it for you. I knew you would.
It's time to put an end to your trek through the stars.
There's an even worse one coming up in one of these movies, Matt. Like, it's bad. It's bad. And you're going to love it. It's so okay. Good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when they're writing that spot, they're cackling to themselves that they put that in there, and somebody's going, no, don't put it in. Yes, do it. It's awesome. No, don't. It's so bad. I'm like, I know it is, but it's great. So we're going to leave it in. And like Berman was like, leave it in.
Well, like I could see like Michael Piller saying, guys, don't do it. Don't do it. Guys, really? I'll let you have this one. You follow everything else I told you, I'll let you have this one.
Right. Right. Right.
I like how Q toys with Picard. Mm. And it's like, okay, fine. I'll answer 10 yes or no questions.
Oh, that's so good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's going through and it gets 1, 2, 3, 4. And it felt very much like the genie in Aladdin and sure. A lot of wordplay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, that was 6. Like, no, 5. No, you just asked 2 questions. Mm-hmm. Just because you put them in one sentence, it was 2 separate questions. You are down by 1, boy.
Right.
And then I was kind of disappointed in Picard in not following through on the rules. I'm like, he didn't keep his composure. Like, dude, Picard, if anyone can do this, you can do this. I wouldn't expect from anybody else in the crew. Like, so everybody else, Riker would get fed up too fast. He wouldn't put up with Q's antics, but you can put up with him. Get your 10 questions. And as soon as like, why? I'm like, Picard, no, you just broke the rules of the game. And sure enough, Q's like, oh, you failed. No more questions. But I guess that's also their way of saying, well, we answered the questions we wanted to answer. So you're done. We're not actually giving you 10 questions. Here we go. You are the cause of the annihilation of man. Go figure it out.
You are to be denied existence.
I had that part figured out before Picard. I'm like,
oh, did you?
No. Yeah. He didn't just mean, yeah, you're not traveling through space. And like, no, he means you're done. He means you're gone. Like, denied existence. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did you realize he was saying he's not going to kill you?
Oh yeah,
like no, they eventually no. go back like, and like no, this is just going to prevent you from starting because
yeah, Q's not that savage.
Yeah,
but like we've discussed we saw that one episode, maybe it was the extra viewing, I don't remember, but where there was the other Q or a second Q or another Q, and we but like I think they had killed somebody or had a history of death somewhere. Maybe. Am I remembering things completely wrong? I wanted to say there was death involved somewhere.
Okay.
And like, it was very anti-Q.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, that's not what we do. That's not how we play. I don't know. Anyway, when Picard insinuating like, you're going to kill us. No, he's not going to kill you. It's not how he works.
Well, Act 6, present day Picard and senior staff are in the conference room trying to figure out what to do next. Since they don't know if it's something that Picard does or doesn't do that annihilates all of mankind, they agree that they're just going to proceed as normal. At the same time, Picard wonders if Q's time shifting is actually an attempt to help Picard save humanity. They'll think more on that later, but right now they've arrived at the neutral zone and the Romulans have a whole mess of warbirds already there. As Picard hails the lead Romulan vessel, we jump ahead to the future to find Governor Worf on screen, denying the Pastor's request for clearance. But with one mention of honor, Worf acquiesces, but only on the condition that he gets to come with them. And then we flash back to season one Picard, ordering a change of course to the Devron system. Troy would like a word with Picard. It would help if you weren't so Captain Jellicoe-ish. Picard says, tough noogies. He has a short convo with a beardless Riker over the monitor and finds out that the replicator doesn't know how to make his favorite tea, which then cues another time jump back to the present where Picard is staring down the Romulan Commander Tomalak, who we haven't seen for a few seasons. They agree to send in one ship each to the neutral zone to scan the anomaly. It's pretty large at this point, but back in the past, they have also arrived and the anomaly is even bigger there. But in the future, having arrived at the same spot, zip, zilch, zero, nada.
So part of me wanted to say like, okay, it's not there in the future. All good to go. It's no big deal. It's gone. Like once they finally explained it, I'm like, okay, fine. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt so backwards. I mean, that was kind of the point of this episode, but like it just felt so backwards that, okay, in the farthest most future timeline, everything's okay. What are you worried about?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it seemed weird, but I guess the thought process should have been, well, that wasn't there the first time we went through this timeline. So talking with Worf, this is what I referenced earlier. Like we find out he's no longer a member of the High Council and he is super confused as to why Riker wouldn't help. Like I appreciated them throwing this in there because I'm like, yeah, I thought that was weird too, man. Like what's going on? You think it's odd too? It's not just me. So that was a good call right there. But the line before that, if only you had a ship with a cloak. I'm like,
hey,
okay, Worf, I know your ships can cloak, but
that should sound off to you, shouldn't it, Matt?
Yeah.
Mm.
Federation doesn't do that. Starfleet doesn't do that.
Ah.
Well, that may change.
Well, there's a thing, and I think that's the implication there, is 25 years into the future, the Treaty of Alderaan no longer exists. Oh, by the way, the Treaty of Alderaan was actually with the Romulans, and the Romulan Empire obviously doesn't exist anymore, so maybe that treaty went by the wayside. Yeah, the Klingons took them over, so that treaty doesn't exist anymore, I guess.
It's only 25 years in the future, but you make a good point that, yeah, if the Romulans aren't around to enforce it, then who cares?
Yeah, what are they going to do? Make a deal with King Louis's head? Like, all the Romulans are like, do what you want. We're super dead. So
another change to our technology.
Yeah.
Warp 13.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad you picked up on that.
Yeah, they used it a few times and I caught it the first time. I'm like, no, you have told me you can't go past 10 and they usually go to 9.5.
Right.
And like it's always like warp 9.5, 9.6.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you're not going to push 10. I got it.
Right. Well, they can't push 10 because on the warp scale. Now remember the warp scale is not linear, right? Like the difference between warp 1 and warp 2 is not anywhere near the difference between like warp 9 and warp 9.5. Like that's a much bigger difference.
They bother going from 9.5 to 9.6. Like it's a huge difference.
That's a huge difference. That's right. And if you ever hit warp 10, supposedly you're going to be like everywhere in the universe at once. Infinity. Like it's a theoretical number. Yeah. You can't do it.
There's an asymptote.
Right. So the thing for that, and this is actually fairly well accepted, is that sometime in the future, the warp scale changed. Not that they ever actually broke the warp 10 barrier, but that somewhere in the future, the warp scale changed. Now,
and they made it better.
Right. Now, would you like to know like the real in-world answer?
What's that?
The idea that you couldn't actually get to warp 10 as a thing, and what would happen if you did get to warp 10 wasn't established till well after this episode aired. It was actually something established, I think, in Voyager. I'm pretty sure it was Voyager.
Interesting then that they they went to 9.5, I remember episodes where they went to 9.5, 9.6.
Well, they talk about there's a warp 10 barrier, but it's kind of like the sound barrier. Like you could, or the light, you just got to figure out how to go over it. But later they talk about like what happens if you actually get there.
Okay.
Is you'd be everywhere at once. Okay. Well, so that's a theoretical idea. You can't divide a number by zero, because then it will explode, and you can't explode a number like you just, you know, so yeah,
it's a square root of -1.
Right. Can't do it. You just can't do it. So that's the explanation there is, they just changed the warp scale, probably to account for those even more micro things between warp 6 and warp 0.7 and warp 0.8 and 9.9, and give you a little more flexibility in there. Maybe they made it linear. I don't know.
Then I know you want to talk about No Beard Riker.
No Beard Riker. Yeah. So that shot of Riker was actually, look, they can do all they want with makeup.
Yep.
But there is no way you can have Jonathan Frakes shave that beard and still come anywhere close to approximating season 1 Riker.
Sure.
It just, I mean, Riker's so, he's so much more full.
Not in 1994.
Sure. Right. Right. He's so much more full as a human being.
Yes.
You know?
I was honestly shocked when that popped up on the screen, like, wow.
Yeah.
He's changed.
Yeah. So if you notice, like when he got up on the screen, he didn't actually say anything. Did you notice that?
I did.
So they were, you know, obviously they were able to ADR whatever dialogue they needed him to say, but the shot was actually a reuse of a footage from an episode we skipped called Arsenal of Freedom.
Sure.
So, and apparently in that particular shot, there was like a guy walking behind him.
Uh-huh.
And they digitally edited that out when they did the HD upgrade. But like you could, in the original run, you could see like the dude walking behind him and go, hey, that's the shot that they used over there.
Uh-huh.
So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. So yes, that was not really Riker. Not current, not shot for this particular
episode. That was actually past Riker.
Yeah, exactly. Which, by the way, and I've never noted it. It's in the notes in other places. Like they will often reuse a shot. Like, oh, this shot of the Enterprise flying by this planet we've seen before in 15 other places. Or, oh, that shot of that ship was actually this other shot that we had over there that they just reused.
Why wouldn't you? It's cheaper.
Sure.
And the average viewer isn't going to notice.
Never know. Nobody's going to know until they put it out on Wikipedia or something, right?
Until the internet.
Right, right.
Yeah, the rest of this was, let's move the plot forward.
Mm-hmm. Oh, come on. I got to talk about the Captain Jellico reference. Okay. Do you remember Captain Jellico?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay.
I wouldn't have picked up on it and made that comparison. But when you did, I'm like, okay, fine. That's a fair comparison. I don't like you comparing Picard to Jellico.
No, you shouldn't. But he's acting very Jellico-ish.
I understood the comparison. Yes.
And just for people out there who may not, in case you didn't go back, one of the things we talked about with Captain Jellico way back in an episode called Picard Gets Taken as a Captive.
That was not the name of the episode.
That was not the name of the episode. What was the name of the episode? Chain of Command. Chain of Command 1 and 2. A new captain comes on board the Enterprise, and he's basically just making all these orders, changing everything. And they're like, hey, so you don't really know anybody and they don't know you, and you might want to take some time to get to know them. And he's like, screw that. Everybody do my orders because I don't have time to fool around with you. That's kind of what Picard's doing here.
I understand, but Picard is doing it for a different reason.
It doesn't matter. From the viewpoint of the people, it's the same. Now, what I love And this is a little, you know, fast forwarding when we get all the way to the end, when Picard finally does stop and make that speech at the end, that's what Jellicoe should have done is had. Yeah. And we talked about that back in our episode. Like, all he needed to do was to look at everybody and go, hey, I know you don't know me. We had a lot going on here. I'm going to ask you just to trust me anyway, because I know what I'm doing. And I really, really need you guys on board with me. You know,
he got there.
Yeah. Yeah. Picard got there. Jellicoe never did.
Picard was adjusting. Like, he knew from the beginning of that timeline, like, we got that personal log that he secured, that log. And it's like, I can't tell them about the future.
Yeah,
I can't. Like, I can't risk that. And so he didn't. And he held very strictly to that in the beginning. And then as the episode went along, he grew and he realized, okay, I can tell you this, or I can tell you, like, I can assure you that you will be able to do these things because I know I've seen you do them, without actually telling you that I've seen you do them. So the end of this episode just gets more and more convoluted as he keeps jumping timelines.
And like, it's beautiful.
it gets so quick. And like,
yeah,
there is one point, I think within 10 seconds, we make three jumps.
Sure. Sure. Thank you.
And it's, it's just tying everything together and saying, hey, yeah, we did what we needed to do.
Can you imagine being Q, like sitting there, like watching it and going, okay, he got what he needs. Boom. All right, move him. All right, now he got what he needs. Move him. All right, he's got what he needs. Move him.
I kind of wondered about that. Yeah. It's like, wait, is Picard gaining control of when he moves, or like, is Q really just sitting there playing with him? It's like,
I want to have that conversation about Q, but not till we get to the end of the episode.
Okay. Okay.
Because there's a really, actually, I think a fair conversation we have to have about Q here.
Yeah.
For now, Act 7. Still in the future, they can't find anything wrong at all in the Devron system. And they can't stay long. The Klingons are coming. Data's going to try an inverse tachyon beam while Beverly makes plans. Picard oversteps his bounds on the bridge and gets an earful of it from Beverly. Picard apologizes and then reminds us, I mean, Beverly, that this is about the entirety of the human race. Beverly understands, but she also tells Picard that he has advanced iromotic syndrome, and this could be all in his mind. She'll give it 6 hours more, but not a second longer. As she exits, Q appears, teasing Picard about his age. All funny business aside, Q reminds Picard that he isn't alone. Ah, here comes Michael Piller. And what you were and what you will become are always with you. Picard understands this to mean his time shifting will help him figure all this out. A time flashback to the present, and Data is scanning the anomaly. Picard suggests using an inverse tachyon beam, just like Professor Data suggested, and they make it happen. But shortly after the beam, Geordi gets a big old headache. And in sickbay, an examination reveals that Geordi's natural eyes are beginning to heal themselves. Data thinks he knows what's going on. This anomaly is an eruption of anti-time, which can work like antimatter and matter and just go boom when it contacts regular time. A time shift to the past, and Picard tells past Data to do the inverse tachyon thing and figure out why this rupture occurred in the first place. And for heaven's sakes, why is it bigger in the past? Another time shift, and Ambassador Picard, that's the old guy, is back on the past shore, which is in the middle of being attacked by the Klingons.
I love that Beverly puts her foot down.
Sure.
It's like, no, I'm in charge here, man. Mm-hmm. I don't like that the future folks keep trying to write off Picard and say, no, it's just all in your head.
But wouldn't you put yourself in their position? Wouldn't you?
But he's told them.
I'm with you.
It's tough. I guess they have one of the toughest positions.
Okay.
Like the present timeline, I think, is in the easiest position.
Okay.
Because he can tell them everything.
Okay.
They've been through these things. Like, they can scan. They found that he might develop a syndrome, but he doesn't have it yet. So they don't completely think he's crazy. But like, I get it. Like, I mean, in the past timeline, he just can't tell them anything or refuses to tell them anything. So that's the problem there. Mm-hmm. But in the future, like, he still tells them what's going on, but just nobody believes him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it's frustrating that these timelines aren't tied together, right? Mm-hmm. Where if he had told them that in the past, or our present timeline, when he goes to the future timeline, they should remember what he told them in the present timeline. Mm-hmm. And so that would have made everything so much easier. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Right.
And they would know he's not crazy. But yeah, I get where they're doubting him, but it's also Picard.
And I mean, but that's what Beverly says. Like, if it was anyone else but you, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. We wouldn't even be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
This wouldn't be a thing.
That's fair. Then Q appears for his pep talk, which seemed a little bit out of place. Like, it made more sense when you said Q appeared to make fun of his age. Like, that sounds more like Q. My notes say Q appears for a pep talk.
Right.
Like, because he did that. That's what it turned out to be. Like, Picard's getting a little disappointed, and, you know, nobody's believing him. And it's like, no, dude, you're on the right path. Keep it up.
Right.
Here's a hint.
Yeah. I love that. Don't forget, what you were and what you will become are always with you. Now, I don't know if I believe that today, but that sounds like I actually want to believe that right now. Like there's this weird unified thing of me where, you know, at least in the past, like all of who I've been, that's always still with me, whether I like it or not. Like it, you know, it's that it's made me who I've become, and that maybe somehow like what I will still yet to become is still help. Like there's this weird, I love that idea. Obviously this had very specific meanings for this episode and what Q was trying to get Picard to believe, but for as much as Star Trek can be about like messages, like that's a cool message I kind of want to believe in, you know?
Well, and I think that goes along the lines of way earlier in the episode, it was actually Picard talking. I think it was when he was talking to Beverly in the ready room, and they're talking about like 25 years from now. And he's like, I prefer to look at the future as something that is not written in stone. And like, I thought that was a huge move too.
Sure.
Where it like mentally it's like, yeah, you've seen the future, but it doesn't need to be that way. And by the end of all this, that's kind of where everybody is. It's like, yeah, sure. That future isn't our future. So anyway, I appreciate how much Picard starts using information from one timeline to help in other timelines. Like I said, that the way they jump through this and speed up the process is like, it was very well done. It's like they got the point across that that's what he was doing, but they didn't spend a lot of time doing it.
Right.
And then they get into a bunch of gobbledygook about anti-time and time and anti-matter and matter. And okay, if you say so. Like I've never looked into much into antimatter.
Sure.
So when they made the comparison, anti-time, it's like antimatter and matter. I'm like, if you say so.
I think I feel like that's 100% something. Okay, like we need something that's going to make it go backwards in time. Like this was an invention to help what they're doing in the plot. Like this is not a real thing at all, right?
Anti-time. Yeah. I've never heard of that outside of this episode.
Right. But it's like antimatter. It collides with time and everything goes boom.
Sure.
Okay. Right. sure will. Too bad that's not just affecting humanity. That's going to affect every humanoid and other life forms out there in the galaxy, but okay. It's not just humanity. Yeah. I will say this kind of just because I'm looking at my notes and you're talking about, you don't like how they're kind of just going on like, hey, Picard, you're going a little crazy here. You're a little nutsy. I really appreciate the acting job from Patrick Stewart here, where he's acting like he's old man going crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's selling, like we know he's not.
Patrick Stewart, once again, I mean, he's had many episodes like this before where he plays out of his normal standard Picard character. It's like something is happening to you. You need to act this. And he does. Like Patrick Stewart is an amazing actor.
So good. He's so good.
He shows it off again here too. He's
so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of these Star Trek actors, but in my personal opinion of all the actors on this show, the two best are Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner. Brent Spiner
I was going to say Data. I mean, I'm like, oh my gosh. Data.
Yeah. Like, and that I'm taking nothing away from Frakes or Marina or Jordy LeVar or Gates. Or I feel like I'm missing somebody, Michael Dorn. I'm not taking anything away from those guys, but what they put Brent Spiner through with the multiple roles he had to play with Lore and his father and the some other things they did where Data kind of takes on multiple personalities in various places. And then obviously what we've seen Picard do, like just the acting chops that those guys have.
And just the fact that Data's the normal character of Data is like anti-human.
And yet, oddly, the most human character on the show.
but it's not just like another race where, you know, you can just make some tweaks to your character and okay, we're there. It's like, no, you have to pretend you're not a human, but you want to be a human. Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Watch Pinocchio. Go for it.
Yeah. Then, like I said, they're under attack from the Klingons now because they spent too much time in the neutral zone.
Yeah, there you go. And don't forget Geordi's eyes going back to normal.
Yeah.
And all that.
Yeah. I honestly thought that was going to play into the future Geordi that we got. Maybe it still does. I don't know.
Yeah.
If that completely reverses or not.
But except the what happens in one timeline doesn't affect the other timeline.
That's true.
You know?
I did not click.
Yeah. Like that.
They made a point of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that wouldn't make sense.
And they did the whole like, look, the future's not set in stone. Anything could still happen, which basically is the, hey, if future writers want to do something different, they can. You know, and it's also the hope of, you know, be your future today or whatever. But yeah. Anyway, act eight. The Pasteur is trapped. They've lost their shields and they can't go to warp. Boom, boom, boom. And out of nowhere, a tricked out Enterprise decloaks. What? And make short work of the Klingon ships. But it's too late for the Pasteur. The warp core is about to breach. Riker beams everyone over to his ship just as they make their getaway, but not before Worf and Riker get all snippy with each other. Riker orders a retreat into Federation space, but Picard pleads with him to stay and save humanity, Will. Save humanity. But that's when he takes a hypo spray to the neck, and we get another time shift to the present. Temporal anomalies are causing more than just Geordi's eyes to revert to their earlier form. If this keeps up, it might kill everyone. And that's it. Picard wants this anomaly collapsed. That's when Q turns up and whisks Picard away to France 3.5 billion years ago. This is the moment when some amino acids are about to combine in the primordial ooze to form the first protein. But that anomaly is here too, and it's really big. So big, in fact, it's filling the entire quadrant. But this anomaly is going to prevent these amino acids from combining and therefore disrupting the beginnings of life on Earth and therefore wiping out all of humanity, causing it to have never existed in the first place. It's something that Picard did to start all of this, and cue another time shift to season one.
We're getting into our action sequences here.
They're bringing it all back around.
So yeah.
Hey, by the way, this scene right here was the very last scene they shot.
With Q?
This one with Q and Picard. It was the very last scene they shot.
Okay.
It's a note.
Sure. Yep. Trivia.
They didn't have anybody else. It was just Picard and John DeLancey. It was Patrick Stewart and John DeLancey. Didn't need anybody else.
So a whole lot of action stuff. The big reveal. The Enterprise decloaks.
Yeah, with a third nacelle.
Yeah, like what is going on here? Like you finally explained it to me. Like it makes sense. Okay, I get it. I my Star Trek lore is not up to par yet. But man, that changes things. Because I mean, of all things, like. Like they made a point. It's still the Enterprise, the Enterprise decloaked. I'm like, oh, okay. But I did appreciate, like, I still don't quite understand why Riker was so dismissive. Was that just to move the story along so they would go talk to Worf and keep collecting the crew, I guess, maybe? So they could get everybody back onto the Enterprise?
I think the short answer to that is yes, like the real world answer. But the in-universe answer, I think, is whatever happened between Worf and Deanna and Riker, that like hurt his relationship with everyone else. Now, it shouldn't have, but it did. Like, it just made Riker a bitter old man.
Yeah, especially not Riker and Picard. Like, if anyone would hold together, I think it'd be those two.
Sure, but if Riker just becomes this bitter old man, he just sort of, like, Picard's like, yeah, it's Riker. He's just pissed off about that other thing. I love him. He's still my guy. He's just a little pissy these days. Like I feel like that's probably the limit of where that idea is coming from.
Fair enough. Yeah. Because, I mean, then he still shows up. Like, that's the thing. It's like, he basically says, I want nothing to do with you, and then still shows up to save him. It's like, yeah, I knew you weren't going to listen to me.
Sure.
So Riker coming back, doing his thing. Good old number one. Admiral number one.
He refitted the Enterprise D, got to save it out of mothballs. Yay for him.
Yep. Got to choose his ship as an admiral. So it wasn't until this scene where, like, it finally clicked, like, what was going on with this anomaly thing and why it was such a big deal. And I mean, obviously that's why they have this scene here, but like the whole time, like I said before, like, okay, it was bigger in the past. Like they made a point. It's bigger in the past. I'm like, okay, it's bigger and got smaller and it got smaller. And then the future it's gone.
Sure.
Who cares? It's gone. Problem solved. It's gone.
Until
like it just didn't click like what they were doing. It's like, no, it's getting worse and worse in the past, which is ultimately going to affect the future. It just hasn't yet.
Sure.
And like that's a weird bit of, I guess, in a sense, time travel, like a weird time thing that I haven't necessarily seen or dealt with, or at least not to that extent.
Well, you've never dealt with anti-time before, Matt.
Exactly. Yeah. So that, like, that's why it was so weird. And that's why it was so hard to get my head around. It just, it was different than anything else that I've seen. So,
sure.
Like, it's not my favorite plot line ever, but at least I get it now.
Well, what I think is really clever is the punishment, quote unquote punishment, is something that you will have caused and not going to kill you. It's literally just going to go back and make it like you were never here in the first place. Uh-huh. It's just going to wipe you out. And, you know, the thing that I always tease, and it always runs across my mind, and I've heard at least three podcasts talk about this, so I'm going to talk about it too. When Q's back there and he's like, you see that anomaly? That's about to prevent these amino acids from forming in this soup of primordial ooze, which, by the way, is in France, apparently.
Yep.
But then Q sticks his hand in the thing and swirls it all around. And I'm like, wait a minute. Did the anomaly prevent it, or did you just prevent it? And he's got it all on his hand. And I'm like, wait a minute. If you do this and fling it, does like some protein go down and that's what causes it to come back together? Maybe that actually is what did it.
I had some of that thought because he pointed it out and then it's like, you see that right there? That's going to be you, Picard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so why are you touching it?
Right.
That's
but it's a cool thing seeing him with his goop on his hand.
Yeah. It felt very cute. Uh-huh.
How did you feel about the fact that all of organic existence of life started in Picard's hometown?
That was a stretch. I think they wanted to tie it to Picard. All they want to do.
I don't know that they thought about it in those terms. I think it's just saying, welcome back to France. This is your home. Oh, look, here's the thing. And, you know, I don't think they gave it too much thought.
No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have. Yeah. I mean, for all we know, it wasn't actually, I mean, 3.5 billion years ago, Q said it was France. How do we actually know it's France? How does Picard actually know it's France?
Well, Q would. If anybody can detect the tectonic shifting plates over the eons and the Pangea breaking apart and all that stuff.
I think he's telling him it's France just to make Picard care about it more.
He very easily just could have said, you're back on Earth 3.5 billion years ago. France is over there. So like he could have said anything and been like, look, you're home. You're traveling the galaxy, you're home. You're on Earth.
Yeah, it was another one of those little callbacks, though, because we know that Picard's from France.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, hey, we've mentioned this before. We're going to mention it again in our finale.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, I just want to, is it in the last one? Yeah, no, I'll save it for this one. All right, Act 9. The Season 1 crew can't penetrate the anomaly. Past data says that a theoretical piece of gear should be able to scan through the interference, but it's still only a theory. We don't have that on the Enterprise. Ah, cue a time shift to the present, and now they just happen to have that exact piece of equipment on board because it's, you know, 7 years later. And it comes standard on every new starship these days. Data does his work and discovers that their tachyon pulse is converging through time at one point in space with two other tachyon pulses from other Enterprises. And 10 forward, the crew is having a drink with Admiral Riker stewing over a lost Deanna and his beef with Worf. But then Picard interrupts like a rambling, drunken old man. Most people think it's his advanced aromatic syndrome, but Data actually gives him the benefit of the doubt and then reasons it out. It's the world's greatest technobabble to date, but in the end, they're going back to the Devron system to try to fix it.
So yes, the bulk of this is, hey, we figure out what's going wrong. Let's move the plot forward again.
Here's what we got to do to get to the end of the show. Yeah, sure.
The only thing of note of interest in here.
Uh-huh. Oh, the only.
We already mentioned.
The only. Go ahead, Matt.
Troy died.
Oh, sad for her. Riker says, I always thought there'd be time. I always thought there'd be more time. Mm-hmm. Somehow, Worf and Riker are mad at each other that Deanna died. As if either one of those two caused it.
Messed up.
Yeah. There's a phrase that comes to mind, Matt, but this is a G-rated show, PG-rated show anyway, and I'm not going to say it. I do actually got one thing for you here. So Data says, and I quote, the tachyon pulse is converging through time at one point in space with two other tachyon pulses from other Enterprises. There's a problem with that. Okay. Tachyon pulse from past Enterprise, tachyon pulse from present Enterprise. But when they shot the tachyon pulse in the future, they were not on the Enterprise. Yep. They were on the Pasteur.
Yep.
Now, Ronald D. Moore was asked about this. And he said the anomaly, you know, he said, yep, that's something that nobody caught until after the show was on the air. Wow. That's a mistake that they made and nobody caught it until the show was on the air. And the person who caught it, the very first person who caught it, Rick Berman's 10-year-old son. Ronald D. Moore described it as very humbling.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have a feeling most of the people kind of wrote it off as, technobabble. Sure. Like, okay, skim over this. Works for me. Cool.
There you go.
Let's move on.
There you go.
Sounds like a plausible explanation.
Act 10. The future Enterprise arrives at the Devron system, and sure enough, they've seen the anti-time rupture occur. Picard says they must deactivate the tachyon pulses in all the time periods. A few quick time shifts and, okay, check, that one's done. Now it's time to repair the rupture. The best way to do that is to take the Enterprise into the center of the anomaly in all three timelines. The season one crew is questioning what the heck is going on, but Picard finally does what Jellicoe never did and gives the greatest leadership speech of the entire series. Before long, all three ships are headed into the center of the rupture, and when they arrive, they can all now see each other, facing each other, all three Enterprises at once. There's a lot of camera shaking going on. The rupture is starting to seal itself, but the Enterprises are all losing warp core containment. In just a few minutes, all three explode individually, and Jean-Luc finds himself back in Q's court. It all worked, and Picard has saved humanity once again, which prompts Picard to issue a thank you. And then Q comes clean. He actually got them into it, but that was a directive from the Continuum. Although it was Q's idea to help out, so good on him. And now we get the speech. In that moment, you considered the impossible, the paradox. In that moment, you got outside yourself and expanded your mind. That's the true exploration that awaits, charting the unknown possibilities of existence. And with that, Q goes away, and Picard finds himself back at the beginning of the episode, interrupting that kiss from Deanna and Worf. So sad that that wasn't in an alternate timeline. And everything is fine, and he's off to bed. Turns out he's the only one who knows anything about the last hour and a half. And in Riker's quarters, it's a final game of poker, and they're discussing the future. It's not too late to shape the future. It's not written in stone. And before TNG signs off for the final time, there's one last chime at the door. It's Captain Picard for the very first time, and he asks to join the game. And reflecting on the moment, he says he should have done this a long time ago. And with nothing wild and the sky is the limit, the end. That was a lot longer than the typical Act 5, by the way.
Sure. Yeah. So I can see discussing the poker game at the end. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling you're going to want to talk about Q in there somewhere.
Sure.
So I'll let you take a lead on that if you want to.
Okay. Are we just going to be like, hey, they wrapped up the episode. All three Enterprises saw each other. That was kind of cool. But yeah, they did it. Can we pass on it with that? Like, yep, they did it.
I mean, that's about it.
It's got no problem. They did it.
Their Act 5 action sequence.
And this, by the way, I like when you say it just seemed like a normal TNG episode, like the way that wrapped up, like that's very TNG as an episode. Yep. But this is an episode of TNG. So, you know, whatever. I've already talked about the Jellicoe thing, so I won't dive back into that. Although, yay for Picard doing what he should have done. Here's what I want to talk about Q, though. And I don't know if you want to talk about this, opening your mind to that it was more than what was in the little box, that this paradox could actually be a thing, and that's what you really want to explore. That's a very interesting concept, Matt. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about our mission here at Beam Me Up to explore the message of Star Trek, that's a very heady idea. And honestly, 20 some odd years into my fandom, I'm not sure that I still fully grasp it. Maybe I'm not ready for the future. I don't know. But I like that idea that you can open your mind to the idea that things are not the way that you understand they are. And I think that might be really it, right? Like whatever box you think the world exists in or the universe exists in, maybe it's more than that. And if you can get outside of that and at least be open to that possibility, maybe there really is a galactic federation out there.
Well, yeah. I think that's the...
Yeah.
Growing up, I always would have told you, you know, aliens aren't real.
Sure.
Just the idea someone came up with. As I get older, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just part of me that wants to believe it's real mm-hmm. or if it's just, kind of opening up a little bit and saying, why couldn't it be?
Sure.
Like there are so many other stars and planets out there. Why couldn't there be life out there?
Sure.
Same kind of goes with like teleportation. I know my sister had this theory. She told me about once when we were growing up that she honestly believed teleportation was a real thing.
Okay.
Because have you ever had this happen to you? Like this was just her reasoning for it. Mm-hmm. Like say you have your car keys mm-hmm. and every time you come in the house, you put them down in the same spot every time. And you're sure you put them down in the same spot. Then one day you can't find them. They're not there. Mm-hmm. And then you find them later in the day, you know, on your bed or between the couch cushions or something. Just something that no rhyme or reason for it. You didn't put them there. Like, I don't have kids, so they didn't put them there. I don't have pets, so they didn't put them there. Like, how on earth did they get there? Like, just things like that where things end up in a different place than they should have been. It's like, how do you explain that? Now, could it just be a faulty memory? Perhaps. Were we distracted? Probably. But I like the idea. Like, it just kind of, you know, like I said, opens your mind a little bit to, okay, I can see that. I see where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Like I don't know if that's quite to the point where Q wants me to be, mm-hmm. but it is, I would argue, and maybe this is the same argument that Picard was making, but it's farther along than I used to be.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting concept.
I like the idea that it was just a moment. Like for just a moment, you considered the paradox. And in that moment, mm-hmm. you showed that you were capable of going higher. Like mm-hmm. the idea that you could consider the impossible. Okay, so let's take this out of science and let's take this into life. Okay, what about that job that you've always wanted? You know, what about that thing you've always wanted to go do? Or that, you never thought you could get on stage and sing, or you never thought you could get up and do stand-up comedy, or you never thought you could, I'm talking about doing stuff, but you know, maybe it's go somewhere, you know, these things you've got, that's never going to happen. Oh, that's impossible. You know, maybe it's losing weight or, I don't know, getting out of a bad relationship or getting into a good relationship or asking that one person out that you've always kind of had a thing for, those things. And you know, they're going to turn you down. But what if you consider the impossible? What if you consider that it's possible that something could happen? And that's where you begin to live. And, you know, I can't think of a better Star Trek message than that right there.
Sure.
You know, whoa, you've got these two.
That,
go ahead.
That thought reminds me of a quote I ran across recently from Jim Rome. And if you are not willing to risk the usual, you have to settle for the ordinary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're getting at here. Yeah. It's like you have to take that leap. You have to believe in the impossible, if you will. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, if you don't open up your mind, if you don't try something new, mm-hmm. well, then things are going to be same old, same old.
Sure. Two warring nations. They'll never be friends. Mm-hmm. Open your mind up to the impossible. Maybe they will be. Maybe they could be. Well, now that you've done that, guess what? If it's possible that they could be, then you begin to work towards it. If you don't just shut it down with that's impossible. Now we could never do that. And again, I go back to, I don't think there could be a better Star Trek message to put out there. And when we say, Matt, and I don't know that we've said it for some time on this show, the world needs Star Trek. This is 100% what I'm talking about. Like, these are the messages that the world as a whole needs to hear. And we need to continue to hear it, not just once, but for the rest of our lives. We need to hear it again and again and again. You know, who knows? I could never get on a microphone and talk about a silly TV show. I could never have a successful podcast. or achieve anything with a thing just sitting back talking behind a microphone.
Hey, I've always said when people ask me what I'm doing now,
yeah,
like, well, if you knew me in high school, you would never believe what I'm about to tell you. Because I literally, when I was in high school, there were days I would go to school, go to all my classes, come home, sit in my room and think, I didn't say a single word at school today. I made it through the entire day not talking to anybody.
And you're not exaggerating when you say that, are you, Matt?
No, you literally
mean you did not say a word to anybody.
I did not say a word to anybody.
Yeah.
Like I was known in every one of my classes as the quiet guy, as the shy guy.
Sure.
Sometimes it just became a thing where people would try to get me to talk because they knew I didn't talk.
Right.
And of course, then just became a game. Well, if you want me to talk, I'm not going to talk.
Right.
Why would I do that?
Right. Right.
Like, so then it was actively me not talking.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, I'm not exaggerating. Like I literally went home and sat on my bed and had that thought. It's like, I did not say a word today.
Matt, I'm only laughing because I think one of the reasons why our friendship works really well is because from a personality standpoint, you're a lot like my wife. And what you're saying here reminds me so much of my wife. It just does. Yeah. It's so like the exact opposite of me. Like if I were to go through a whole day not talking to somebody, it's because I don't have a mouth that works anymore, or I hurt or something like that.
Sure.
Or I'm really, really mad about something. Cause other than that, like, no, we're going to talk.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, if I tell people, like I started podcasting, yeah. I run 4-hour podcasts. I run 2-hour podcasts. I have started 4 different podcasts. I've been on 8 different podcasts.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah. Speaking of a four hour podcast, hopefully this one goes sub. Let's keep this sub 2 hours. I hope maybe not. All right. I got to talk about one more thing with Q though, before we get out of here. I'm sorry. Was there anything else with that you wanted to address before we move on? Cause that's the core message. And I don't want to skip over that.
No,
nope, okay.
No, nope, we're good there.
I floated this idea to you a while back and you completely poo-pooed it. And I let you poo-poo it. And I said, okay, fine. We'll come back to it.
Sure.
Okay. But I floated this idea out to you. And I want to say that this actually was an idea that was put forth by Brandon Braga. Maybe not. But talking about Q and what is Q and why, more specifically, why is Q and why is Q interacting with Picard and the Enterprise and the way that he does over the course of his episodes? And I said to you at the time, I said, you know, in his own weird way, Q is not a villain. Now, we talk about Q being the villain, but Q is not really a villain. He is here to help Picard. He is here to give them warnings and to prepare them for what is to come. And you were like, no, Q's bad. And that's just the way he is. I'm curious if you remember that conversation, and if so, do you still hold to that idea, or do you give what Brandon said a little bit of credence that actually Q is not actually the villain, but is really here in a very weird way to help Picard and help humanity?
All right. To answer your questions kind of in order, I can't say that I remember that conversation, at least not clearly. Okay. I do not doubt you at all that that's the reaction that I had, or that's what I said. Mm-hmm. That sounds like something I would do. I don't remember was that like after the first time we met Q?
No, had that conversation? It might have been after the episode where Q introduced us to the Borg. You remember it was Q that threw us over to go see the Borg, right?
Yep.
You know, but we come to find out later, hey, the Borg
was that already before or after the episode with the second Q.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I know all of those sort of start to blend together a bit for me.
In my head right now, between the episode with the second Q, where we saw a little bit of a difference between that Q and our Q, and this episode right here.
Okay.
Particularly after this episode right here, I would tend to agree with you more.
Okay.
Like this is a much better example, and maybe going back now and rewatching some of those other Q episodes with this episode in my mind, I might be able to get on board with that a little bit. But I think where I was, what I wanted Q to be, or what I thought he was at the time, with my limited experience, yeah, I believe I would have said that. I believe I believed that. But yeah, I would say that has changed then.
It might have been the episode that we did Tapestry, which is the one where it's a Wonderful Life in Space, where Q took Picard back after he had the whole heart thing and like gave him a chance to relive his life if he didn't do that one thing. Okay. Yeah, it might have been that one. Now that I'm trying to think about that. Okay. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. Now, I don't mind telling you, this isn't the last we're going to see of Q.
Sure.
There is some more to come, and we'll revisit this conversation then and see if you have a fuller idea of who Q is and, he says the continuum made me do it or whatever, but it was my idea to help you.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, there you go, pal. Okay. We got to talk about the final scene though. Scene's total fan service, right? It's total fan service. Yep. Pull at the emotional heartstrings, had nothing to do with the rest of the episode.
Like I said, this is the only scene that makes it feel like a finale.
Right. Cause other than that, it's a season finale show, right? Yeah. It's your typical cliffhanger of an episode.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the constant referral to all the different things that they picked up along the way, the Leah Brahms thing and the Jellicoe thing and the
bringing some other of those people things back. Helped.
Yeah.
But I mean, it didn't help that I didn't catch all of them.
Sure. Sure. But this scene, they're playing poker again because poker is like a big thing on the Enterprise. By the way, when I went into this, I said in my head, like, I have to get the poker game in there somewhere. Like Matt has to know that they play poker and they do it a lot.
Yep.
I did not realize how many times we would be watching episodes where they were. And I was pleasantly surprised. It was like, oh, when Matt gets to that final scene, it's going to be so much better for him. Cause so many, like, I'm not going to lie, there's several episodes that I weighed heavily for me because of something that happened in this finale. Like, you wouldn't be able to appreciate this finale without having had that up. Like Attached. All right. When we watch Attached, that's the episode where Picard and Beverly start hearing each other's thoughts. The main part of that episode to me was, how does a world become a part of the Federation? Secondary to that was, hey, Picard and Beverly sort of have this thing and we haven't explored that at all. Oh, by the way, this is really going to pay off in the end. Like that was always a part of that conversation to me anyway. But Picard finally comes in and joins the game for the first time. Did you know that he had never really been a part of the game? Had we ever talked about that?
I want to say it, like, I wouldn't have known that. I don't think offhand. Something in the back of my head told me, though, oh, this is his first time.
Yeah.
And I think that's because you mentioned it to me once.
That could be because the captain doesn't interact with his superior, you know.
Like, it might have been the last time we had a poker game, mm-hmm. you know, a few weeks ago. Like, I think maybe you mentioned that or something. Like, something stuck in my head. It's like possible. Someone told me that he's never played with them before. You were probably leading up to that.
I was probably hinting at that. Yeah. I don't remember right now, but yeah, there's a lot of things that I say here and there that's like, the yep. Trekkies who know will know, and you don't until we get there.
Oh no. I fully understand that. Uh-huh. I did that many, many times in
on your own show. Yeah. Also. Yeah. So it's his first time there and he sits down and I, you know, he looks around and they're like, he says, I should have done this a long time ago. And she's like, you were always welcome. Uh-huh. And he's like, yeah, I know, but you know, captain, not supposed to socialize, but you know, Captain Picard crosses a line here with this crew in this moment that he has not yet crossed. Right. We understand there's this great relationship between Captain Picard and at least the bridge crew, the senior officers, uh-huh. right? I don't know that we would ever fully describe them all as friends who socialize together and take their meals together and things like that. Not necessarily including Picard in that, but like, you know what I mean? Like actually true. Like, I love you. You're my friend kind of a thing.
Yeah. Like you said, wouldn't take their meals together. And as long as you're differentiating taking meals together versus getting a drink together.
Right.
Like, these are people who get a drink together.
Right. Well, but I'm talking more Picard with everybody else. Like,
yes,
Picard Riker and Deanna and Geordi, all those guys, though, they hang out all the time. Yeah. Right. But Picard doesn't necessarily. Kind of, yeah. Like, Picard doesn't go to 10 forward and get a drink. Picard goes and gets some tea out of his ready room. And yep. That's it. Like, yeah. Yeah.
I gotcha.
So the idea that they kind of cross this line, almost
they only do line. Because it's the finale. Well, they sure. would never do it otherwise.
Sure. But what's it going to do to the movies going forward? Huh? I don't know. Anyway, but they really, you know, they It's a line that gets crossed, and I love that they crossed it because it needed to. It's a line that needed to be crossed. Like, you have to be familial when it comes to this kind of stuff. But the imagery of the poker, of the game that Picard calls as five card stud. Okay. It's normal, ordinary, everyday, going about our lives. Mm-hmm. Nothing's wild.
Yep.
Right. No shenanigans. Nothing's up. It's just us going about our ordinary life, and the sky's the limit. We can do anything.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Star Trek. Star Trek, all the way through.
I caught that description. I'm like, they chose their words very carefully. Sure.
That even might have been a pillar edit, you know. And then you get the picture of the Enterprise flying away. Yep. Perfect as a finale for that moment right there. And it's the end.
That's it.
Well, Matt, that's it. Star Trek, The Next Generation, at least as far as your first run through it, your limited run of the 176 episodes you've seen. If you count double episodes and things like that, you're probably in about the 45. So you're about a third ish, a little less than a third of the way through. I don't even know if it's 45. I don't know if it'd be that much. You're in your 30s and 40s. That's it. There's a lot you've missed. So Matt, I want to ask, we already talked about, did you like this episode? Would you watch it again? And I'm just going to answer, yes, you did, even if you don't realize it. But as far as being beamed up into the fandom, like, you're thinking back on Next Generation as a whole, reflect on Next Generation just for a moment for us before we move on.
Man, I wasn't prepared for this. Next Generation was aptly named. Mm-hmm. It truly is the next generation. That, I mean, it's like multiple generations past the original series, but it leaps and bounds ahead of the original series in a good way. Still carries the message, but they moved the show forward, showed what they can do. They had a phenomenal cast. And I mean, is it weird? Is it going to be weird to say it's my favorite Trek to date?
No, it should be. And frankly, The Next Generation is the Star Trek, for me anyway, that I compare all other Star Trek to.
Okay.
Now, I also compare all other Star Trek to the other Star Treks too. But yeah, I mean, Next Generation, man, especially when you think about that first season and how rough that first season really was. And Matt, you don't know how rough that first season really was.
I think we watched like two or three episodes and I barely remember them.
Yeah, four. We watched four episodes. It was rough. And the second season was less rough, started getting its feet under it, but still not great. That was the Dr. Pulaski season. You know, and then season three, they really started running, and then they hit that best of both worlds where they, you know, with the Borg and Star Trek took off and never looked back.
Yeah.
Next Generation took off and never looked back. And it's
spurned things figured out.
Right. And I got to tell you, I think very specifically, Star Trek, The Next Generation spurred at least four sequels, direct spinoff series.
Sure.
Because of Star Trek, The Next Generation. Obviously, Deep Space Nine, they did it before Next Generation came off the air. Next Generation was going off the air and like, oh, we got to have something to replace that. So here comes Voyager. I would argue even Enterprise, because it fits within this whole thing.
You say so.
And, you know, and even some new Trek comes right back to the at five. Actually, my God, there's one that's
called Picard. I would assume that is a spinoff.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll eventually get to that for you, Matt. And I'm not sure how we're going to get there. I'm not sure where our cutoff point on this show is going to be, where I'm going to just let you go. Because boy, you talk about serialized TV, Star Trek being made in the new era. That's it.
See every episode.
You don't miss those. You can't do new Trek the way we're doing this run.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Anyway. Matt, would you qualify yourself as a Trekkie at this point, or Trekker, whatever your preferred terminology is?
To some extent, I think I'm invested enough that I want to call myself one, but I think I don't know enough. Like I feel like I don't know enough to actually call myself one, because as soon as someone brings up anything from past season three of Deep Space Nine,
sure,
or anything from Voyager or anything from Enterprise, like, I don't know.
You don't even know the names of the characters. You couldn't say, wait, who's which one's from where? You'll get there, Matt. We'll get you there.
Okay. That's fair. What I mean. Like,
yeah.
once I get to that point, I will feel much more comfortable. Like, because I would hate to walk up to someone and say, "Hey, I'm a fellow Trekkie. So who's your favorite character from Enterprise?"
I haven't got there yet.
I don't know.
I'll say this, Matt. And those of you listening out there, if you've made it through this episode this far, at what point did you consider yourself a fan of Trek? What point did you consider yourself beamed up into the fandom, regardless of what term you use, Trekkie, Trekker, or none of the above, just a Trek fan? At what point did you know all of those things? Obviously, at some point, Matt, the Trekkies didn't know who was the captain of Enterprise because Enterprise hadn't even aired yet. Yet they still considered themselves.
Yeah, I feel that's different though.
Yeah, because you're on the other side, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Well, I promise you we will get there. Matt, I have one more question and then we're going to wrap up.
All right.
Is there any part of you that wants to go all the way back to episode one of Next Generation and binge the whole series? Like, would you go back and rewatch and do a next gen? I'm not saying right now. I'm just saying, would you go back and do a next gen binge?
Everything I couldn't podcast about it, but yeah.
Oh, I would hope you'd be watching it fast enough that you couldn't podcast about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I would want to do.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Yes. Because, frankly, that is the whole point of this podcast to me.
Okay.
That's what I want for you, is to get you to enough of a fandom that you say, "Hey, I got a good idea of the story of what's happening. Now I want to go figure out what all I missed. I want to go see these episodes that Brent says is really good. I know there's going to be some stinkers in there, but he says there's some really good ones that he just couldn't put in because there were some great ones that we skipped."
Let me tell you, it's going to be a joy to be able to just go sit back, press play, and watch it.
Well, Matt, I will tell you, if you're ever sitting around, you got some time to kill, or you're working and you want to have a background episode on any Next Generation episode you want to do, feel free, my friend. In fact, I would recommend you just do it. Just do it. Just do it. It's worth it. It's good. And it's only 7 seasons. Don't, you know, most shows
after I catch up on my Netflix, I will be back into Star Trek.
It's on Netflix. Anyway. All right, Matt. Well, would you like to know what we're doing next week?
What's going on? I am assuming we're back to Deep Space Nine.
Well, that would be a good guess, Matt. And we might be in Deep Space Nine for a while, at least till Voyager premieres. Because Deep Space Nine is the only Trek on TV until Voyager premieres. Yeah. Which I will. So this episode aired. All Good Things aired May. I want to say it was May 23rd, 1994. The episode you're about to watch is the DS9 episode that also aired on the same day. So imagine you're a Trekkie and you have just watched the finale of All Good Things. And immediately after, this is the episode that airs.
They were on the same day.
Same night. Yep. Back to back.
Who planned that?
Can you imagine having to follow the series finale of Next Generation?
Yeah. I mean, that's rough by itself. Like, but still, I would think as a Star Trek exec, I wouldn't want to monopolize two nights instead of just one.
Well, that eventually winds up happening. But you know, keep in mind, they were with Deep Space Nine, they were trying to launch a new show. They wanted to keep the Star Trek people. They wanted people to watch it. So you put it on right after Next Gen.
I see that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will tell you, by the time Voyager comes around, Deep Space Nine has got its own following enough.
Yeah.
And actually Voyager wound up premiering on a different network. So they wound up being on two different networks, which is very weird. Yeah. Yeah. Voyager went over to the I want to say it was UPN. Oh, wait, maybe that was Enterprise. We'll figure that out. I got to go back and do my math on that. Anyway, here's what we're watching. We're watching an episode called The Collaborator. It is a single episode, not a double episode. Watching an episode called The Collaborator. And oh, Matt, we are getting so close to the end of season 2 of Deep Space Nine. And extra viewings for the Next Generation?
No.
All of them. Oh, that's fine. All I'd give you is all of them. All right, Matt. That's going to do it for us this week on Beam Me Up, a Star Trek podcast. Folks out there, remember, if you want to get in touch with us, you do that by emailing us to beammeuppod@gmail.com or head over to beammeuppod.com for more ways to contact us. Please let us know your thoughts on All Good Things. Matt, where can the people find you out there on the internet to talk about this?
You can find me over on Twitter or Instagram at As a Matter of Matt.
And if you guys want to get in touch with me, you can find me at Brent Allen Live across all the social medias. I would love to connect with you there as well, too. Guys, it's been a fun ride through Next Generation, but now it's time to move on. Until next time, folks. live long and prosper.